You have had a stroke. Do not attempt to dance. Do not attempt to walk. Do not attempt to drive a car. Use the restroom alone or make a phone call. You will follow the instructions found on this record. Sit there silently and suffer the odds. Please turn the record over. Please turn the record over. Please turn the record over.
The odds are African Americans are twice as likely to suffer a stroke as white Americans, but there are steps you can take to help beat the odds. Call 1-888-4-STROKE or go to strokeassociation.org.
Join the power to end stroke.
Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Don't miss today's Sloan Ranger Show on WGNU. Missouri Congressman Todd Akin joins Lloyd just after 5:30. Then in the 6 o'clock hour, Krista Kafer of the Independent Women's Forum discusses the boy crisis in American education. That's all on the Sloan Ranger with Lloyd Sloan. 5 till 7 weeknights on AM 920 WGNU.
You must be your fairy godmother. Yes.
It doesn't take a fairy godmother to tell you that the right fit means everything.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in that.
Children under 4'9" need to be in a booster seat because they aren't ready for adult safety belts alone. Remember that 4'9" is the magic number. And get your little pumpkin there safely in a booster seat.
Oh, thank you.
For more information, visit boosterseat.gov. This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Time now for another edition of the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother,
but the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Brothers, come to the center.
my ancestors who were raped, who were killed, and hung because of their plight for freedom and for dignity. They died for me, and they died for you. This is for them to know that, yes, we are still fired up, and we're still talking about revolution.
Every one of you, my dear brother, when you go home, here's what I want you to do. We must belong to some organization that is working for and in the interest of the uplift and the liberation of our people. Go back. Join the NAACP if you want to. Join the Urban League. Join the All African People's Revolutionary Party. Join us. Join the Nation of Islam. Join Bush. Join the Congress of Racial Equality. Join SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. But we must become a totally organized people. And the only way we can do that is to become a part of some organization that is working for the uplift of our people. We must keep the local organizing committees that made this event possible. We must keep them together. Go back and join the local organizing committee. And then all of us as leaders.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the morning wake-up call. My name, say my name. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. Get up, get to me. We have much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. I want to talk about yesterday. Can I talk about yesterday, please? I want to talk about yesterday. Yesterday was an historic event in the history of the city of St. Louis. We had the swearing in of the first citywide elected president of the Board of Aldermen, a man who is of African descent. Huge. Big deal. History making. Hundreds of people showed up. It was a beautiful thing. It was a beautiful thing to be a part of that. It was a beautiful thing. Now, explain to me. And we have cops, and we're going to talk about what Jennifer Joy said about those cops that steal. Explain to me why, then, there were cops outside of City Hall. Now, there's a ball game going on, too, now. They weren't down there by the ballpark. They were running people's plates, booting cars, and towing cars, all within an hour span. They were running plates. They weren't looking at meters. They were walking up to cars and running plates. And if you had two tickets, you were getting a boot on. And after you got your boot on, they were towing people. Now just mind you, think about this. Think about what message that this police department, when they should have been out there stealing tickets from baseball players, were out there booting. Now, they weren't around. They weren't around the Cardinals. Oh, no. They want the people that are coming down to the Cardinal games to keep coming down to the Cardinals games. You can park anywhere you want to in a Cardinals game. Anywhere you want to. Anywhere you want to, and you don't get a ticket because they want you to come back. They were booting. No. They were running plates. They weren't checking meters. They were running plates. They were running plates. Do you hear me? They were running plates. They were booting cars. And they were towing cars. Now, I suppose you could say that this was an attempt to get some revenue for the city, but I think it's deeper than that. I think it's much deeper than that. I think they're sending a message to the city of St. Louis about, I don't care if you have a black president of the Board of Aldermen, I don't care. You need to know who's in charge. Those of us who steal and all of those who help us steal. You want to understand. Acting with another, because that's a crime in the city of St. Louis. If you steal and I help you steal, I can be charged with acting with another. Jennifer Joyce is acting with another in the case of stealing. You know what she said? She said that those cops, those poor cops, the ones that said I stole the tickets, they were coerced into it. Huh? Their confessions were coerced? If men with guns and blue uniforms, I'm not talking about the Crips, I'm talking about cops. If they are coerced by fellow officers, what's a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, 20-year-old, 21-year-old without a gun? What good is his confession? What, they beat you, baby? They beat you into saying that you stole those tickets. Jennifer Joyce said, I want you to feel this. I truly do. I want you to feel this. Jennifer Joyce is saying, because I just want you to feel this. How many times have people said, oh, I don't know. Let me think of one off the top of my head. Reginald Clemmings. He said he was beaten into a confession, too. He was beaten. Did one complaint of police brutality stop the prosecutional train from moving out the station? Heck no. H-E double toothpicks, no. But what Jennifer Joyce is saying is because those cops said they beat me, they coerced me, they made me say I stole the tickets. She's saying, I can go no further with this prosecution. They say that they were coerced. You know what? If this is not the most corrupt city in America, cops steal World Series tickets. Steal them. Just like breaking into your house, they stole them. They used them, and then they put them back in the evidence locker. And they say to Jennifer Joyce, they beat me. They made me say I stole the tickets. And Jennifer says, oh, baby, don't you worry. Don't you worry, your little thieving head. Don't you worry. We all steal, says Jennifer Joyce. I got no problem with stealing. If you a cop and you steal, yeah, ain't no problem with that. Do you hear me? Are you listening to me? We live in a city. You know, they made a mistake when they said we're the most dangerous. No, we're the most corrupt. this is the most corrupt police department. I just want you to help me. Help me tie this together. Cops are out running plates on citizens coming downtown to celebrate a positive thing that sets us apart from other cities all across this country. A beautiful display of democracy at its finest. Cops are out running plates, booting cars, and towing them in the midst of a celebration. And then on the same flip of the coin, Jennifer Joyce is letting loose, is freeing criminal cops to prey upon all of us. Jennifer Joyce is saying it is not a crime to steal. Jennifer Joyce is saying if cops say that they were coerced into a confession, then that stops the prosecution train dead in its track. That's what Jennifer Joyce is saying. That's what Jennifer Joyce is saying. Do you hear me? Do you hear me? This city, and I had a discussion with who's responsible for this. Is it Francis Slay who put the call out to say, run plates, boot cars, and tow them? Was it Francis Slay that said, now remember, there were dignitaries coming all across the state. People flying in from all over this country for this event. I saw cars getting towed that have special plates on them. So what kind of city hall, who's responsible for this? Is it Francis Slay or is it the corrupt police chief? And you can go on other, it is so profound. Ain't nothing but a bit of stealing. What you tripping about? You can go on other airwaves, television waves. Ain't nothing but a bit of stealing. Get over it. If cops steal, give them a break. You know what? Break this. Break this. 1-877-920-WGNU. Sam.
What? Hello?
Yes.
What I was getting ready to say was, this has happened before. Years ago when Louis Farrakhan came into town. Louis Farrakhan came into town. It was a nighttime event. And I just happened to go the wrong way, me and my girlfriend, coming down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to turn around, and the cops swooped down on me so quick that I didn't know what the hell was going on. So I left and went on back home after they ticketed me.
Why'd you leave?
Well, I figured since I got this ticket, wasn't no sense of hanging around. I mean, you know, I wanted to come down there and see the gentleman, and this was one of the things that transpired, because they were all up and down that area right there by the little park over across from City Hall. Down from where he was speaking at that particular night. And I thought it was a shame, but, you know, most people who come from out of town normally face this kind of thing when dealing with the city of St. Louis.
And the message to our entire community, don't ever let them make you leave.
Mm-hmm.
Ever again in life.
Well, a friend of mine, he happened to be a cop, and I told him about what had happened, and he went to court with me.
I'm not talking about your ticket. I'm talking about the event.
Uh-huh.
Don't ever let them make you leave again.
Oh, but I wanted to say this to you. You know when you left yesterday?
Yeah.
And they had your newscast
yes.
at the 9 o'clock hour?
Yes.
That's when I heard about that Jennifer Joyce thing.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, and you know, it's one of those jaw-dropping events, because it's like, what?
All
you
right.
Don't prosecute these guys.
That's fact.
And that sends the wrong message.
You think?
And I was saying, like, okay, well, next time she run out here and say, I need your vote to stay circuit attorney, I say, I hope the citizens do the right thing.
And all right, and I got to roll.
Send on out the door.
Got to roll. I'll be back. Stay with me.
Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock, or 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather for this 6 o'clock hour. Northbound 55 at Route Z and Route M, there's an accident. Left lane's blocked. It's at Route M. Look for stop-and-go traffic. Westbound 64 between 159 and 157, there's an accident near 157. Look for stop-and-go traffic, too. Eastbound 70 from Jennings Station through Goodfellow, look for an accident on the ramp to Goodfellow, so look for traffic to be building this hour. Hall at Adelaide, the traffic lights are not working. McDonald Boulevard at 270, those traffic lights are not working. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge, look for slow traffic, especially in the left lanes. Westbound 270 at Old Halls Ferry through West Florissant, look for some delays. Northbound 270 at Gravois and Doherty Ferry, look for some slowdowns already this hour. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Mason, look for some delays. And eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79, look for some slowdowns as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, look forward to mostly cloudy skies in the morning, partly sunny by the afternoon, high in the mid-60s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 40s. Thursday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 60s. Thursday evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 40s. And Friday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 60s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 49 degrees and overcast skies. Lambert Fields is reporting the same. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call is up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. More riveting radio with Liz Brown. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU, your station where the issues matter most to you.
Have you ever wanted to purchase those custom rims at a reasonable and affordable price? Well, now you can. Affordable Rims and Tires, located at 5868 St. Clair in East St. Louis on the Hood's Flea Market Lot, has some of the finest custom rims in the area. Let me give you an example of some of their great prices. 18-inch tires, only $105. 20-inch, $150. 22-inch tires, $185. Rims with tires are also reasonably priced. 18-inch rims for $12.99. 20-inch rims for $14.99. And 22-inch rims for only $17.99. Now you can afford those custom rims that you've always wanted. At Affordable Rims and Tires, 5868 St. Clair. Owner Charles Vaughn says you will be satisfied. Visa and MasterCard are accepted. You can contact Charles at 618-293-0040. 618-293-0040. 618-293-0040. Affordable Rims and Tires.
Hi, I'm Randy Graham. Join me Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. for Animal Tales on AM 920 WGNU. Animals have always mattered to me, so that's why we discuss the issues that matter most to you and your animal companions. Join us as our special guests and I examine puppy mills, parrots, turtles, ferrets, and answer your questions about pet care. For 2 hours of fur, friends, and fun every week, join me, Randy Graham, for Animal Tales, Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on AM 920 WGNU. Woof.
Come home after a hard day and just start in on me, you know, like, hey, how's your day? How was school? What you got going on? I mean, it gave me the chills.
The time I got this wicked, cool scorpion tattoo on my shoulder, not even the whole arm, just the shoulder, and he grounded me for 2 weeks. 2 weeks! And oh yeah.
Don't worry. They'll appreciate it. Eventually. A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council. Have you been a dad today? For more information, visit fatherhood.org.
Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Redemption songs. Redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy. Cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Ooh, some some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? Is all I ever had. Redemption.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name, my name, my name. Say my name. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. You need to hear this. 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 Jennifer Joyce, in her own words. Let me see. There is no admissible evidence to support any charge, including stealing. The only evidence is the officer's statements to Internal Affairs, and that's not admissible because it's considered coerced. The officers are ordered to answer or face losing their jobs. How is that coerced? Tell the truth or lose your job. They didn't say you did it and lose your job. They said, tell the truth or lose your job. And that's coerced? You know what? Oh, kiss my grits. I am forbidden by the Constitution to use coerced evidence to prosecute or even use for jumping off a point to an investigation. You know what? You are such a lie. How many people are in jail right now saying that they were coerced? You don't have a tape recording of the coercion. What was the coercion? You mean these cops confess to doing something that they didn't do because they were told you'll lose your job? So then what about a 16-year-old who's told I'm going to kick your butt if you don't tell me that you did this? Is he coerced? This is the most corrupt city. The 8 officers admitted to the department investigators that they took some 30 World Series tickets from more than 100 seized from scalpers. You know what? I want to know what happened to the rest of the 100. I want a subpoena to the Cardinals organization to see if those tickets were scanned into their system. That's what we need to know, because I bet you, by golly, wow, everything in my fiber of being says every one of those 100 tickets was used. Every one of those 100 tickets were used. Bush Stadium, Bush scans but does not tear tickets, so they were not physically changed, but before being returned to the evidence. Charging the officers with tampering with evidence was never considered. There has to be an alteration, a destruction, or concealment. Excuse me? Tampering with evidence is removing evidence from the evidence locker and using it and bringing it back. So, if I as a citizen go take $20 from the evidence lab and use it to put a down payment on an item and get that $20 back and put that $20 back, or if I go into the evidence lab, go get some jewelry that's in the evidence lab, wear it to a party on Monday night, and put it back in the evidence lab. If I go get some cocaine and hand it out at a party and get some more cocaine and put it back in the evidence lab, that's not using it. That's not illegal. That's not problematic. That's not a crime. You can't, you know what, you need to quit your dang job. If you can charge innocent people all day long with stuff, You can't find nothing to charge? She said she and her office worked with internal affairs detectives and also conducted an independent inquiry in interviewing some of the scalpers and using a grand jury. This was a very complicated legal issue. Everybody is amazed with the legal complexity of it, and the public probably thinks, typographical error. The public probably thinks that there's a clear-cut law being broken, but legally I don't have a case. The cops said that they were coerced into what? Where's the coercion? The cops were told you're going to lose your jobs if you don't confess. You a dang lie. They said they did it because they didn't think anything was going to happen to them. That's why they said they did it. They weren't scared. And you know what? I guess they right. Harry.
Miss Brown, she's just nullified any testimony given to Internal Affairs in the future, hasn't she?
That's fact.
Because now any police officer accused of wrongdoing,
that's right,
that goes before Internal Affairs,
that's
he will
right.
say I was coerced. So whether he shoots someone in the back, beats his wife, or beats a citizen,
or does cocaine on the job, smokes a little weed out in his car, sits in his car and does nothing but eat donuts and drink coffee and doesn't do his job, and they bust him for it. Well, I was coerced because you told me I would lose my job if I wouldn't tell you the truth.
She's given St. Louis City police officers blank checks
to do all
type of crimes.
Yes, she has.
Worse than a worse criminal.
Yes, it is. Yes, she has.
And I don't even have a law degree, and I can see that.
And here's the other piece of it. The thing that I've been saying from the very beginning is that we have this. This is not a police department. This is the mafia.
And as you always say, it's about who's accused of doing the crime.
That's a fact.
If there were 8 black police officers,
they couldn't find a crime to charge him with. You need to kiss my grits. You know they would be coming up with every kind of crimes that she hadn't even talked about. If they had 8 black cops that stole some World Series tickets and gave them to some of their partners.
Plus,
and sitting up there in the box seats?
We would have seen their pictures on the front page of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Mike Owens would have been doing an ambush interview.
There would be a perp walk that was still going on. They would still be showing the tickets. Even with the story that came out of Virginia Tech, they would have had the little crawler at the bottom of the screen. Remember the black cops that stole the tickets? Remember the black cops that stole the tickets? You know they would.
And Ms. Brown, you're the only media source that's given us this information. No one else. Everyone else just goes with the flow.
Oh, and a university cop who worked with the detectives, he didn't steal them. He quit his job rather than face the possibility of dismissal. They were going to fire him.
Apparently, they don't tolerate police corruption in University City, but in St. Louis City, they do.
Oh, in St. Louis City, it's part of the job description. It's part of this job description.
Well, keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks for your call. 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have all kinds of stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Get up. Get up. Get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. John.
Hi, Liz.
Good morning.
I wanted to remind folks that today is the day that the police board is meeting on this issue. And they'll probably be issuing some kind of statement at the police board meeting as to, you know, what their decision is on discipline. They don't have to accept Mokwa's recommendation for a slap on the wrist.
This is an obscenity.
They can fire these officers today if they want.
They should fire. These cops need to be fired. Period. Dot.
Well, there's no question about that. And the Coalition Against Police Crimes and Repression is having a press conference before that board meeting. We're going to be down at police headquarters at 9 o'clock. So anybody who can make it today, you know, come out and help us get the message across that these cops need to be fired.
Thank you so much, John.
Okay, take care.
Listen, folks, my name is Liz Brown. Taking a break. Stay with me. place to shop for all your appliance needs? Sears. 3425 Union. Black-owned and black-operated. Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union. Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Hi, this is Phil.
And I'm Tim, and we're your hosts from The Real Deal with Phil and Tim.
Tune in every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. for real news.
Or Seal's version of the news on the radio.
That's right. You can listen to my opinion or you can listen to his, but we all know we'll be listening to my opinion. You can also tune in for interviews with senators and other interesting people, like me.
So make sure you tune in every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 for The Real Deal with Seal and Tim.
You take the family to the food court. Your wife and Pete head for tacos. You and Danny want Chinese. You look up at the menu. You look down to see what Danny wants. But you don't see Danny.
Danny!
Every parent knows that feeling. Imagine if he were actually abducted. To receive free Amber Alerts on your cell phone, go to wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. Brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. Dee.
Good morning, Dr. Brown.
Good morning.
The world is watching this because I was talking to some people in California. People all over know about this thievery from entrepreneurs buying tickets to sell over. You know, if Gerald T. Christmas had made this decision for 8 black police officers, he would be villainized. We need to remember Miss Joyce, because she's got high aspirations.
This is prosecution 101. You give up. I mean, just feel me for a second here, Dean. You give up a prosecution because somebody says that they were coerced. If those are the rules, then those are the rules, and we need to open up the jail and let out a whole bunch of people. And what is coercion? Is coercion saying if you don't tell me what happened, I'm going to take away your job? That's coercion? No, it's not. No, it's not. And wouldn't you love to go in front of a jury and say
he was coerced?
Wouldn't you love to go in front of a jury as a prosecutor and say, This is we cannot afford to have a single police officer on the street that would steal like this.
That's right.
She would get a conviction before her head turned around.
That's right. But you know what? There are other news stations that's really mad about it, too. So, you know, I'm glad you're doing it. You started it, but other people are picking up.
I hope so. I hope so.
Okay, thanks.
All right,
Doc.
Thanks for your call. 1-877-920-WGNU. Jennifer Joyce says, there's no admissible evidence to support any charge. The only evidence here is the officer's statements to internal affairs, and that's not admissible because it's considered coerced. Wait a minute. Coercion has to be proven in the court of law. That's why you have trials. You have trials to figure out whether or not the person is telling you. Let a jury decide. You don't decide. Unless, of course, you have physical evidence of a bat to the head, bruises, photographs. What's the evidence of coercion here? And the question becomes, is it coercion to say, if you don't tell the truth, you're losing your job? That's not coercion. Coercion is, I'm going to beat the crap out of you if you don't say you took this stuff. That's what coercion is. And here's the thing. You go into court and you fight this out. Okay, the defense attorney thinks he has an argument to say they were coerced because they were threatened with the loss of their job. Let's rock and roll, because I believe I can convince the jury otherwise. Let's rock and roll. Let's rock and roll. Car phone.
Good morning, Ms. Brown.
Good morning.
You know what, Ms. Brown? I'm not surprised, and I can tell you why. Jennifer Joyce and those cops, them rogue cops, they hang out together. They hang out down in South County, South County and South City. I've seen some things with my own eyes. I used to be a taxi cab driver. They hang out together. That's one reason why, she's not even thinking about prosecuting those cops. And, that's my comment.
Thanks.
They hang out together. They're buddies.
Thanks for your call.
Okay.
So does the mafia hangs out together, too. So does the mafia. Here's what the, and when I say mafia, I just want you to hear, the White Police Officers Association said, these are not thieves. They made a mistake. But wait a minute, I thought they were coerced into something. Which is it? Were you coerced into something that you did something that you didn't do? Or did you make a mistake and inadvertently do something that you didn't mean to do? Huh? The Police Officers Association is saying, the White Police Officers Association is saying, they're not thieves, they made a mistake. Okay. Then tell me why Jennifer Joyce is saying that their statements are coerced. And is your case based upon their statement? They haven't made other statements? Oh, and these poor folks that made a mistake? They're lieutenants. There are three sergeants involved in all of this. Ain't that some stuff? Douglas.
Good morning, Ms. Brown.
Good morning.
I have to agree with you. I think probably at the very least they should be fired. I think probably they should be brought up on charges. I think, and I'm not an attorney, but I think it was a criminal act that these officers did.
Of course it is. I am a lawyer. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
That's about it.
There you go. Thanks, Douglas. 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. Al.
Yeah, if the ordinary citizen do it, Liz, they're criminals and every other kind of name. But the police do it, it's a mistake. Have a good day.
It's a mistake. They're not thieves. It's a mistake. They have families, and it's a mistake. It's a mistake. Zenobia.
Hey, good morning, Liz Brown, and good morning, St. Louis.
Hello?
Good morning, Miss Brown. How are you this beautiful day?
Oh, I'm outstanding. What happened to Zenobia?
From the leather seat of the chief of the city of St. Louis, Chief Mocha. Mocha called the officer's action intolerable, but also said they have shown deep and serious remorse and can be redeemed, he said. I guess it was kind of hard to charge 8 police officers standing up in front of you with 8 pistols and you trying to charge them with scalp and ticket. And don't forget now.
Well, you got a pistol, too. You got a pistol, too. So what?
Yeah, but you got... Forget, these officers work with narcotics, too. It's a little bit more money in narcotics than it is them tickets. So like you said, maybe they can use it, go out, buy some more, replace it before you have to go to court and nothing be done about it. So they do deal with narcotics. So this stealing didn't just start at the World Series game. I think thieves don't just start. They started somewhere months ago.
Years ago.
Years ago. So like you said, Joyce Hayes, is she a vote? She a type of person that you have to vote her in, right?
Of course. Remember?
Well, we need to vote her out.
Thanks.
Because she's not for us.
You're not black officers.
I want to say this, too. The black police officers, you guys are the one can stop what's going on within your department, and you will have the peoples behind you. But you got to stand up. Your badges are given to you from the same person that give it to the white police officer. You officers going to have to start standing up for yourself.
Thanks for
your call.
Because
it's going to come down to you one day.
Thanks for your call. Edward.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
Have you ever heard of the Knights of the Alley Dogs?
Yes, I have.
Okay, I don't know if they're still going on with this, but it shows the arrogance.
It shows lawlessness.
Yeah, lawlessness.
They're thieves and liars. Thieves and liars.
Let's cut to the chase. What can we do about this?
Well, one of the things you can do is to go down to the police board today, because they're supposed to be voting on whether or not they should be fired or suspended. And reduced in rank for no less than a year, but they get to keep their job.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that they've... And just listen to the two contradictory things. Mocha is saying that they've shown deep remorse for something that they did, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Joyce is saying, well, they didn't do it because their confessions were coerced.
Okay. There was a young lady that was raped over there. They had a clubhouse, I believe,
yep,
on South Grand.
Yep.
And the guys, they're arrogant.
They're lawless thugs. Arrogance is something completely different from my perspective. They're lawless thugs.
Yeah.
People that were part of that club and the people that are getting away, the cops that are trying to get away with stealing are lawless thugs. Let's be clear about it. You wear a uniform. You wear a badge. You wear a gun. You hold your hand up to serve and protect our community. You stole these tickets and now you're whining and crying and saying that you shouldn't be held to the same standard that the rest of us are held to. That's what a thug says. That's what a lawless person says.
I hear you, Liz.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
St. Louis Public Schools Watch is coming right at you in the next hour. And in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking about some folks that have disappeared in America. Secret imprisonment, detainees, war on terror, and a lawsuit that has been filed to fight this. And that's in the 8 o'clock hour. Coming up, of course, is Peter Downs and the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. Stay with me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal freedom.
And so we say to all in this nation who would dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. There was something about Soong Hee Cho that was just kind of off.
He would, you know, just be looking down, but he would know that you were walking by him, and he would just kind of had this smile on his face. It was just kind of like a sadistic smile, almost.
And that's how Pat Song, a student who had come across Cho on campus, describes him. Police say Cho was the gunman in this week's Virginia Tech University massacre, a 23-year-old English major from suburban Washington, D.C., who unnerved a few of his professors, too. More from ABC's Aaron Katursky.
Daria, the more we learn about Soong Hee Cho, who brought such unimaginable violence here to Virginia Tech, the more we find out that there were warning signs all along, and perhaps nowhere more glaringly than in what he was writing for his creative writing professor, Lucinda Roy. She told ABC News that the writings were filled with violence and rage and so disturbed her that she recommended counseling. Daria?
With classes canceled till Monday, many of the students left the campus for a few days, but thousands who opted to stay attended a candlelight vigil last night. It was in memory of the victims. Speakers urged them to take comfort in one another, but most of the service was devoted to silence and to quiet reflection. President Bush will be meeting with Democratic leaders today. They're trying to hammer out some kind of an agreement on an Iraq war funding bill.
Rich Falk is a deputy sheriff from Los Angeles.
And it may be easier said than done if you ask some people who are involved here working out the differences between the House and Senate bills on the funding could delay the showdown with the president for a week or two, but not put it off. Congressional Democrats insist that Congress will not capitulate, in their words, to the president. They insist on a timetable for withdrawal. The president promises to veto any such measure, saying that would just encourage the terrorists. There are a lot of us who are itching for a fix from our BlackBerry today. A huge shutdown's left almost all devices in the Western Hemisphere dead. ABC News.
Hello?
Awful night.
Beth?
My erosive acid reflux.
Haven't you heard of Protonix Pantoprazole Sodium?
What?
Protonix. One daily tablet helped control daytime, even nighttime acid reflux symptoms.
Nighttime symptoms, too?
Yep. Even helped repair acid reflux damage. Plus, I save on my Protonix prescription.
Think I could save on my copay?
Check your health plan.
Right. Gotta go.
Where?
To see my doctor about Protonix.
Protonix copays are not less than generic drugs. Prescription Protonix heals acid-related erosions in the esophagus and relieves associated frequent and persistent heartburn. Most patients heal within 8 weeks. Your results may vary. Doctors may prescribe Protonix longer to maintain healing. Studies lasted 12 months. Other serious stomach conditions may still exist. In studies, the most common side effects were headache, diarrhea, and gas. Go to ProtonixSavings.com or call 866-794-ACID to learn more about Protonix, acid reflux disease, and savings. See our ad in the Saturday Evening Post. Ask your doctor if Protonix is right for you.
We're learning more about the crash that left New Jersey Governor John Corzine seriously injured, and what we're learning is not necessarily good news for the governor's driver or the governor, for that matter.
Investigators believe Governor Corzine's Suburban was speeding at 91 miles an hour along a 65-mile-per-hour stretch of the parkway, and that by the time the SUV spun off the road, it was going 30 miles an hour when it rammed into the guardrail. Experts explain big SUVs can prove dangerous even when following the speed limit.
Because they are top-heavy, they have a high center of gravity, they have a greater propensity for rolling over.
If excessive speed was not dangerous enough, officials admit the New Jersey governor in the front passenger seat was not wearing his seatbelt.
That's ABC's Lucy Yang. A new study says it's time to revise the revised warnings about the side effects of antidepressant use when it comes to children. A doctor's group says the benefits for kids and teenagers far outweigh the risks, including the risk of suicide. They say taking a child off the meds who needs them is really bad. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom. Here's another WGNU News update. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news this morning, after a student's grandmother phoned a threat to school employees, Riverview Gardens High School was put on lockdown for a short time yesterday afternoon. School officials say the threat stemmed from a fight that broke out at the school between 10 girls shortly after their lunch hour concluded. School officials say the staff was able to bring the situation under control and the girls were told they would be disciplined. After that, a parent of one of the girls involved in the fight called the district, and a short time after that, the grandmother of the same student called the district and made a threat.
The lockdown was canceled around 2 p.m. and students were dismissed shortly thereafter. In other news today, the 8 St. Louis police officers who took World Series tickets from scalpers and allowed family members and friends to use the tickets will not face criminal charges. WGNU's Rich LaCroix has more on that story.
Circuit Attorney Jennifer Joyce announced Monday that while the actions were wrong, there is not enough evidence to proceed with criminal charges. She acknowledged the public outrage, but concluded that their confessions to internal affairs were the only strong evidence, but would not be admissible in court. Wednesday, the police board will decide whether to accept Chief Joe Mokwa's recommendations, which include suspension and demotion for the officers involved, or to seek tougher punishment, which could include termination.
That's WGNU's Rich LaCroix. And another note on that story, the Coalition Against Police Crimes and Repression plans a press conference at St. Louis Police Headquarters this morning at 9 to react to the decisions of Chief Mokwa and Circuit Attorney Jennifer Joyce. That's this hour's update of WGNU News. I'm Peyton Colston for AM 920.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather for this 7 o'clock hour. Northbound 55 at Route Z and Route M. There's an accident reported. The shoulder's blocked at Route M. It's been moved to the shoulder, and you can expect stop-and-go traffic in that area. Eastbound 70 from Jennings Station through Goodfellow. There's an accident. Two lanes are blocked. There's two left lanes. That's at Goodfellow. Look for delays there. Westbound 64, 159, and 157. Look for stop-and-go traffic due to an accident. Left lane's blocked. That's just west of Illinois 157. And crews have the left lane closed on eastbound as well. Westbound 70 between Riverview and Goodfellow. Look for an accident on the ramp to Goodfellow as well. Eastbound 70 between Bryan Road and 79. Look for some slowdowns. Westbound 40 between McCausland and 170. Look for delays there. Eastbound 44, a heavy volume from Soccer Park through 270. Northbound 55 from 3200 South Broadway into 44. Look for some slowdowns there. Northbound Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge, you've got slow traffic at the top of the ramp. Westbound 5570 from 64 into the Poplar Street Bridge, it's got some delays there. Westbound 270 from 367 through West Florissant, look for some slowdowns. Northbound 270 at Gravelway and Doherty Ferry, there's slowdowns around the interchange at 44. And then again, northbound 270 at Dorset all the way into 70, look for delays around the 70 exit lanes. And eastbound 70 between 270 and St. Charles Rock Road, look for heavy volume there. Southbound 170 from 270 through North Hanley, look for heavy volume. And northbound 270 from Clayton through Ladue, you've also got some delays. That has been your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, look forward to mostly cloudy this morning, partly cloudy by this afternoon, high in the mid-60s this evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 40s. For Thursday, partly cloudy, high in the lower 60s. Thursday evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 40s. And Friday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 60s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have overcast skies, 49 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting the same. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It's up next, the St. Louis Schools Watch with Peter Downs and Liz Brown. That's on the way. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU, your station for the issues that matter most to you.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King.
was shot and was killed tonight. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
This is St. Louis Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly in-depth look at developments affecting the education of our children.
Oh, welcome, 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 welcome to the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. This is Liz Brown. I'm here with Peter Downs. Peter, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine this morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. A Thursday, big doings at the board. Talk to us about that.
Yes, special meeting last Thursday six things that are worth noting. First thing was we removed Veronica O'Brien from the presidency. That was a unanimous vote of the board.
Everybody voted, including Flint Fowler.
Including Flint Fowler, yes. So that was 6-0, too.
And how did Veronica react to that?
Well, she wasn't there.
She wasn't there. Now, out of all the time that you have been on the board, has Veronica ever missed a meeting like that?
She missed the meeting, the 2 days before, the first meeting after the election.
Okay, so prior to
But now, I got it. Be fair now. Keep in mind, she's been canceling meetings in March and February.
I understand. But the canceled meetings aside, has she ever really missed a meeting before this?
No.
So she's basically, it appears that she's just stopped coming.
That's what it appears. We have another meeting next Tuesday, and we'll see if she's there.
So the significance of this, you have, so did you vote for new officers?
No.
Okay, when is that going to take place?
That's going to take place in June.
In June.
We have, under our bylaws now, we have officer elections in June.
Okay.
And so we thought it best to just leave that, we just remove her from the presidency. The vice president takes over those duties.
Until June.
Until June.
So what do we have facing us now in terms of deadline types of issues and issues that we need to have our eye on?
Okay, the first and most important deadline is the deadline this Friday mm-hmm. for turning in the appeal of the state board's taking away of our accreditation.
Mm-hmm. And this is the...
And we did vote. We did vote Thursday to appeal that.
Okay, and also you voted to have lawyers look at this, right?
Yes, we voted to go ahead and have the board's lawyers and lawyers that several of us had hired in Jefferson City. We brought them on to the board's payroll. They've already done a lot of work,
mm-hmm.
Paid for privately, and have them work with the board's existing lawyers to craft the appeal, and if the appeal fails, to craft a lawsuit.
Now, do we know whether this has been filed or not? The appeal.
I do not know.
Okay. So we need to know whether or not that, and Friday's the last day.
Friday's the deadline.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is really the most critical thing for this board at this point, isn't it? The filing of this appeal?
Yes.
Appeal. And tell us why this is such a critical, this is the one thing that has to be done, and explain why.
Right. This is the loss of accreditation is the linchpin for everything that the state and enemies of public education want to do to the St. Louis Public Schools. The loss of accreditation is what allows them to replace the elected school board with an appointed board that looks like it'll be one appointed person, but an appointed board to run the district. The loss of accreditation is what allows them to say, all right, anybody can go to a county school district and the city taxpayers have to pay for it.
Oh, we're going to continue this conversation. This is the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Peter Downs. Stay with us.
I'm Karen Stewart. Join me on Sunday morning at 8 a.m. for Strategies for Building Wealth. This program will explore topics designed to help you better manage your finances, improve your net worth, and understand the basics of investing. So join me as we talk about strategies for building wealth, Sunday morning at 8 a.m. right here on WGNU.
Time to make your money work for you.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
Hi, I'm Lorraine Davis, home mortgage consultant with Wells Fargo.
And I'm Jacques Land with the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis.
And we're the hosts of Let's Get Wealthy, investing in more ways than one.
We'll discuss home ownership as a means to build wealth, create positive personal finances, stabilize our neighborhoods, and acquire the American dream.
Tune into our show, Let's Get Wealthy, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. to get some food for thought during your lunch hour. Sponsored by the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis, Wells Fargo Housing Foundation, and produced by the Platinum Group.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Good morning, Miss Please. This is Taylor Mitchell calling you from a clean school. Second grade room 209. Miss, I'm having a great year. I love you. I love the beautiful message, African message that you gave me. Miss Liz, did you ever know that you're my hero? You are the best I ever know, just like my teacher. Because you are the star of my eyes, just like my teacher. I'm in room 209 where dignity reigns supreme. Have a happy summer. Love you.
Love you.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning Wake-Up Call.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. My name is Liz Brown. I am here with Peter Downs. And Peter, let's talk about the battle that we have going on here in the city of St. Louis. Is we've got to file that motion. The motion must be filed on the part of the St. Louis Public Schools to stop this, to fight this, to stop
right.
and to fight this, taking away the accreditation. Okay, so we have that battle going on. In the meantime, while we're fighting that battle, we've been successful. We won the board elections. We've got the people on the board. We've got the votes. We had the vote to make that happen. We won that fight, and we're fighting it. But there are also people that are fighting against public education up in Jefferson City. There's a bill that was introduced by Rodney Hubbard and Talibel Amin that's floating around in the House. Talk to us about that.
Yes, that's House Bill 1281. It's got the support of the House Republican leadership. And it would do several things. Number one, And this is not in order of importance, but one thing it would do is it would break the St. Louis Public Schools up into several districts.
Now, this is only focused on the city of St. Louis and no other place in the state.
That's right.
This is all about the city of St. Louis Public Schools, and that has the Republican leadership's support.
Yes.
None of those people live in the city of St. Louis. Everybody that it has the support of, none of them live in the city of
That's
St.
Right.
Louis.
That's
okay.
Right.
All right.
The bill, they say a minimum, break up to a minimum of five districts. What I've heard from people I've talked to in Jefferson City is that it would actually be seven districts. They'd want to break it up into where each district would be four wards.
So I see where that's going.
And so you can get out your ward map. You can probably pretty well draw which, you know, here's the Central West End District, you know.
Here's the deep South St. Louis District, and the part of South St. Louis that is becoming more ethnically mixed is going to be a little district in itself. And then there's North St. Louis.
Right, right.
Done, and done.
Yep. So that would be part of it. That would be one option under this bill. Another thing the bill would do is allow the state to reimpose a transitional school district at any time.
So they wouldn't have to go through a process.
That's right. That's right. And the third thing, the very last, I think it's this bill. It's possible I'm confusing with another, but the very last paragraph of the bill would allow the transition district to ask, basically allow the transition district to turn all the schools over to the mayor to be made into charter schools. So every school would be a charter school.
And under the control of the guy who, when he was controlling the school district, we lost 26 accreditation points.
That's right. That's right. And it's, to me, it really illustrates the hypocrisy of a lot of the discussion in Jefferson City. Because you have taught, because if every school is a charter school, they each do their own thing. So there's been a lot of talk about, you need, one curriculum, one set of textbooks across all the schools in the district. Fine, but if they're all charter schools, they all get to pick their own. They all get to do their own thing.
So on the one hand, we're being told that a criticism that's being leveled at our district is that we didn't have the same curriculum for everybody. And we spent tens of millions of dollars to when Francis Slay was running the district, they insisted that in order for kids to learn, they all had to have the same curriculum. We spent tens of millions of dollars to make that so. Now, under this bill, we would have lost all that tens of millions of dollars because they're now saying, well, we're going to break it up into seven districts, and charter schools can do whatever the heck they want to do, and we're not going to have any of this continuity.
Right, right. Yeah, when Slay was running it, it was not just, they were much more extreme than just saying one curriculum. Mm-hmm. They were saying, you know, everybody in every school should be taught the same thing at the same time on every day. So they were
Hitler liked that too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now it's let a thousand flowers bloom.
And here's the other piece of it, Peter, that I think that is very important for us to underscore about charter schools. You just found out Desi just sent out some information about charter schools. So make the connection of why we should really be opposed to charter schools.
Right. That was the other thing. This whole brouhaha over St. Louis Public Schools, it's all done under the name of improving quality, right?
That's
their name.
They say
we have the Missouri School Improvement Plan. We measure you X, Y, and Z. You aren't improving. We need to do something to improve education, blah, blah, blah. That's the argument coming from Jeff City. What we found out from the State Department of Education is that charter schools don't have to do any of that. Charter schools do not participate in the Missouri School Improvement Plan. Charter schools cannot be. And then because of that, the state cannot remove the accreditation from charter schools. They're just banned by state law.
Wait a minute. Do they have to take MAP testing?
They take MAP testing, yes.
Okay.
But they don't have to show anything on the MAP testing.
So if everybody in every charter school fails miserably, as most of them are doing, because charter schools are doing so poorly, if they all fail the MAP test, there's nothing that anybody in the state can do about it. They can't come in and close the charter school.
Not according to Desi, they can't. That's right.
So the St. Louis, the largest school district in the state, can be closed, can basically, can be taken over by the state for
not following, not being sufficient on the MAP test, the following the Missouri Improvement Plan, they can have their accreditation taken away from them, but a charter school is immune from that.
Charter school has a free pass. They don't have to meet any of those laws.
So then how do we know that any child is being educated at all in the charter schools?
We don't. We don't. And so here we have a plan. You know, if you look at the actual legislation, compare it to the rhetoric is saying we need more accountability, we need to improve things, and the legislation says, well, let's do away with all accountability. Let's let them do whatever they want and forget about them. Because that's what you get with charter schools.
And so the district, the school districts in Rolla, the school district in Webster Groves, the school district in Ladue, they all have to follow the MAP plan. I mean, they all have to follow, they have to take the MAP test.
Yes.
They have to follow the improvement plan.
Yes.
And they have to be evaluated if they do or they don't.
That's right.
And if they don't, then the state can take them over as well, correct?
Correct.
So every other school district in the city, I mean, in the state of Missouri has the ability to be evaluated and the ability to, of the state to make certain that the public education that the kids are entitled to is being delivered to those kids.
Yes.
But they're saying in the city of St. Louis, because there are a bunch of black kids there, we don't give a dang about what kind of education they get. Because there are a bunch of black kids on the other side of the state in Kansas City, y'all have as many charter schools as you want to because we don't care. We don't care whether you measure, whether you test well. We don't care if you're following the improvement plan. We don't care. We ain't looking. Just go do it because what does it matter whether these kids are educated or not?
That's right. That's right. And you know, those regulations are up and down the line. We had, I think it was last year, St. Louis Public Schools lost some money because they had too many teachers who were not accredited in the subject they were teaching, who did not have the certification subject they were teaching. Well, you don't need certified teachers in charter schools.
And it's a way to also to bust unions as well.
Yes, you divide that up. I mean, look, we've got 90 schools, mm-hmm. plus or minus a couple. Each one becomes a charter school. You don't have one contract.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
And I'm sure they're assuming that they become charter schools, that there'd be no union.
No, how could there be?
Well, you could sue it. The teachers all agreed to become, if the teachers decided to stay in the union, they could also insist on unified bargaining with all the schools, just like you have now in constructions. Carpenters bargain with all the companies that hire carpenters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one set of contract negotiations. It's a different kind of negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
It would make things harder for the union if someone, but it doesn't, but I don't think it automatically means the death of the union, which I think is the plan.
Mm. So we have all of these different charter schools. There are no more public schools. Why would a family decide to buy a house and move into the city of St. Louis? Because a charter school, how is a charter school accredited? If there is no district, how is a charter school accredited? I mean,
that's a good question.
I
don't know.
Okay, I mean, we would have these high schools out, because right now the only charter schools we have are for grade schools or middle grade schools.
There is one charter high school.
Okay.
And that's the Construction Career Center.
So we'd have all of these charter high schools out here, charter grade schools, and various and sundry accreditations, no accreditation. How would that work?
It would be chaos, I think. I don't know how it would work.
We're going to take a break. We'll get to some of your calls when we come back. This is St. Louis Public Schools Watch. I'm talking to Peter Downs. Stay with me.
Good morning, St. Louis, 29 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather for the 7 o'clock hour. Northbound 55 is stopped from Herculaneum all the way through Route M due to an accident that's been cleared, but you can expect stop traffic there. Eastbound 70 is stop-and-go traffic from Florissant Road through Goodfellow due to an accident at Goodfellow that's been cleared. It's passed some delays, but other than that, everything should be moving pretty soon. Eastbound 70 from Highway K through 79, look for slow traffic. Westbound 40 between Clayton Skinker and 170, look for slow traffic there as well. Eastbound 44 from Soccer Park through 270, heavy volume going on there. Northbound 55 from 3200 South Broadway into the 44, look for some delays. Northbound Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge, that ramp is a little slow and sluggish at this hour. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is moving well from the Illinois Bank into the landing. Eastbound 40 from Spady through McKnight, look for delays. Westbound 70 from Riverview through Goodfellow, the accident's been cleared on the ramp to Goodfellow, but expect slow traffic. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street into the Poplar Street Bridge, look for some slowdowns there. Northbound 270 at Tesson Ferry and Doherty Ferry, look for delays. Westbound 270 from 367 to West Florissant, look for some slowdowns there. Northbound 270 at Dorset all the way into 70, look for slowdowns in the right lane. And that is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, look for mostly cloudy skies this morning, partly sunny by the afternoon, high in the mid-60s this evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 40s. Thursday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 60s. Thursday evening, partly cloudy, low in the lower 40s. And Friday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 60s. Currently, we have cloudy skies, 49 degrees. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the Wake-Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather. It's St. Louis Schools Watch with Peter Downs and Liz Brown. It's on the way. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU, your station who discusses the issues that matter most to you.
This is Mark Glass. Tune in every Friday at 5:15 for What's New at the Movies on AM 920. I sit through the bad ones so you don't have to and give you an early heads up on the good stuff. So for advice on getting the best mileage from your entertainment budget, join me, Mark Glass, for What's New at the Movies, Friday afternoons at 5:15 on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues and the movies that matter most to you.
I'm Phil Person of Person Roofing. We've been in business about 17 years, and we've advertised on WGNU almost that whole time. We have installed over 5,000 roofs in that period of time, and today I have a customer here. His name is Mr. Merriweather. Mr. Merriweather, I think we installed a roof on your house about 10 or 12 years ago.
Yes, you did.
Recently, you had a little storm damage on that roof, didn't you?
I sure did.
Can you tell what happened?
Yeah, Mr. Person come out and repaired my roof and didn't charge me anything.
And you haven't had any problems since we did a repair?
I sure haven't.
Even though your warranty was out, we still came out and took care of your roof.
Right.
We try to service our customers, and if you would like to have a new roof, call us at 361-7127. That's Person Roofing at 361-7127. All phases of roofing.
This is Alan Brainerd. Join me Wednesdays at noon for Design 411 on AM 920 WGNU. No matter where you live, no matter what your lifestyle, you'll find out how to turn your ordinary home into an extraordinary home. My guests and I will give you the 411 on everything from classic design to the newest decorating trends. Join me, Alan Brainerd, for Design 411 every Wednesday at noon on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you and your home.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
This is, good morning, Miss Liz. This is Amir Muhammad calling you from LaCree School, second grade, from 409. Miss Liz, I had a good time with you. Miss Liz, our class is watching Roots. Kuta Kite knows his roots. His mother name is Dipper, and his father name is Amaru. Kita has dignity. Have a good summer. This
is Amir Muhammad from Home 209, where dignity rides the plane. Love you.
Love you.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. I am here with Peter Downs. This is the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. Let's get to some of our callers here. Christine.
Yes. Peter, I'd like to say first that I don't know anything about how to go about filing an appeal. So this is my question. Since you were in touch with private attorneys and you knew that we were going to file an appeal, why couldn't you not have had the paperwork in place so that when you got a majority on the board that could go ahead with the filing of the appeal, could go right ahead and do that instead of having to now appears to be scrambling around to get the appeal written up? Thank you.
We actually did have paperwork in place.
And if we look at the days that we're dealing with, we had to wait till when? Last week?
Thursday was the day when the board.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So 6 days later, we're talking about the filing of the appeal, and the appeal is the last day that we had to file it was Friday. So I think, in all fairness, you need to understand all of the back work that had to be done to, one, get a meeting. Number two, get the votes together for everything that you needed, have a successful election, and then be able to move in that. And on top of all of that, of course, it was already written. Of course, it was already prepared.
Right.
All it has to do is be filed.
Yeah, lawyers had already prepared. Those lawyers had already prepared an appeal. Now they have to
File it.
You know, they have to file. The superintendent has to look at it, mm-hmm. and you know, there are still people who had to look at it once the board finally made that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, for all I know, it might already be filed. You know, there was no requirement that they send out a message to all the board members on the day when it is actually given to Jeff City.
But you know what? I think that would be a good idea. Given the gravity and given the importance of this, I really think that might be something that you all want to do.
Yeah, yeah, I want to find out. Is it filed?
Yeah.
If not, tell us when it's done.
Yeah, and send a memo to all of it, because there's no do-overs. Because
right.
You can't do anything after Friday, so this one is so critical that it might not be a bad idea for all the board members to be notified the moment that it happened. 1-877-920-WGNU. You're on the Wake Up Call.
Oh, good morning, Attorney Brown, and of course to Peter Downer. This is Brother Bob, and I would just like to give a follow up and keep the continuity of what the International Urban Institute Education Committee and the supporters are doing as a follow-up to our meeting with the Attorney General top delegation person last Wednesday there in Jefferson City. His name was Attorney Paul Wilson. But I'd like to say that personally, I feel that the struggle for justice must be fought on all fronts. Right now, we do have a lot of the illegals being taken place, which I think is going to be historical. But I also feel that along with the legal battle, we must continue with the International Urban Institute in promoting political awareness and civil actions in our communities. So this gives people room to get involved on all levels and all fronts where they feel comfortable with, because I'm pretty sure with the community backing, since this is a high-power issue here with our schools and saving our students, people can really get involved. And so as a follow-up to that meeting in Jefferson City, the International Urban Institute, along with their supporters with the Education Committee, we met last night, and we're going to have the recommendations and the report to the full body, because, you know, with the International Urban Institute, we do everything within a democratic way, and the full body will vote on it. And last night, we had a chance to view and see it for the first time, the videotape that was taken there, about 51 minutes. And it came out to be real good, but I will like to recommend to the full body this coming Sunday that we show this to the community and to the people there. So we will be meeting this Saturday at 5 Building, 1020 North Taylor. That's our regular meeting from 9 to 11. And, of course, the public is certainly invited to come out. So it'll be this coming Saturday morning at the 5 Building, 1020 North Taylor.
And Brother Bob, just one quick question. Will you be showing the tape at the meeting?
Oh, no. We have to get the approval of the body of it. But one thing about it that I had a chance to see, although I'm on the tape, so much be happening in 51 minutes while you're sitting at the big table meeting with the lawyers, then you get a chance to break it down and analyze it after we had the meeting.
So you're going to vote at the meeting on Saturday whether or not to show the tape to everybody else?
At a different time. We just so much happening now, we can't squeeze it all in this coming weekend. Once the body get it, then we need to be contacting other organizations, the community people, and everything to do it in a systematic way, A, B, C, D, E. So we have to respect the full body.
Oh, I'm just trying to bring clarity to what people can expect if they come to the meeting on Saturday.
They will definitely have an update report on what it is, and we'll have the body to vote on it, and then I'm almost sure with the recommendation that they will vote to show it at a later date. Maybe the following Saturday, I think, would be great.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Bob.
Thank you now.
1-877-920-WGNU. D.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Peter.
Yes.
We know you don't get paid. We know you don't have a full staff. Please call on us to assist you in your efforts with completing your paper chase. Thank you.
All right. 1-877-920-WGNU. Yes.
Yes. Hi there. Good morning, ladies from the east side.
From the east side.
Hi there, Peter.
Hi.
I just had a little tidbit of juicy news. I was watching one of the local news channels. I can't recall if it was 4 or 5 because I was multitasking at the time. But anywho, the No Child Left Behind situation in Dallas, Texas. Most of Texas has abandoned this system of learning that Bush has crammed down everyone's throat. They said that they spend so much time in preparation to get ready to test throughout the year that they have little or no time to teach the children the subject matter that really matters. You know, everything is far from the truth that they need to teach as far as math, science, you know, regular curriculum. So they decided to only test at the end of the year the way it used to be, everyone. And it still fell under the federal guidelines, state guidelines of the No Child Left Behind Act. So they went back to the original way of teaching, and they only test once a year at the end of the year.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Alfred.
Yeah, hello, Liz. I thought Desi said that they couldn't use the school board lawyers to fight that case.
Desi doesn't have any authority to do that.
I just thought I heard that.
No, Desi was hoping that the school board lawyer would not fight it. No, Desi doesn't have any authority to do that.
Okay, one more question. Explain the metro schools, because a lot of people are satisfied with them. I think that's under the public schools, right?
Yes, it's a public school, St. Louis Public
School. Yeah, a lot of people are satisfied with them. So maybe you can turn all the public schools into the metro. I don't know. I'm not familiar with that.
So, all right. Thanks
Alfred. Bye now.
This goes to the discussion of magnet schools, doesn't it?
Yes. And how one word can be used for many different things.
Mm-hmm.
There is one school in the public schools called Metro High School, which is often rated as one of the best high schools in the country. And Metro High School has certain admission requirements that make it an elite school.
And 100% of its seniors go on to four-year colleges.
Yes, 100% of seniors go on to four-year colleges, but you have to remember that not 100% of freshmen become seniors.
That's correct.
You know, if you people go into Metro.
It ain't no joke. Metro is no joke.
Yeah,
Metro is a rigorous
school.
Yeah,
they're careful about who they admit, mm-hmm. and then you get in, and freshman year, you can't hack the amount of work they put on you,
mm-hmm.
then they ask you to transfer to
right.
a different high school.
Right.
So it's not for everybody,
mm-hmm.
and it's not intended to be for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And it's a small school.
Now, in the legislation that's been introduced in the Missouri House that we were talking about earlier, they used the phrase metro districts. That has nothing whatsoever to do with Metro High School or anything like Metro High School.
Mm-hmm.
It's just using the phrase from Metropolitan. And,
there's some deviousness going on.
But it's a they want to set up little districts, and each little district they're calling a metro district.
And speaking of devious, Jeff Smith will be at Metro tomorrow.
tomorrow night.
Yes.
As part of the parent assembly. Parent assembly. And I encourage everybody to go to Metro tomorrow night to listen to the mess of Jeff Smith and to also to confront him on the insanity that he is attempting to bring to our district. What is it, 7:30 or 6 o'clock?
6:30.
6:30 tomorrow at Metro. Be there. Be there. I'm talking to Peter Downs. This is the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. This is Liz Brown. Stay with us. For all your appliance needs, Sears, 3425 Union, Black-owned and Black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union. Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap. Weekday afternoons, immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Hello, I'm Minister Glenn Rogers, host of Radio UFO, Uncommon Facts and Observations. On my show, I've had some wonderful guests, like Dennis Ballfazer, the coordinator of the 60th anniversary of the Roswell incident, Felix Clairvoyant, a priest with the Raelian Movement, an organization that believes that mankind was made from a higher civilization of mankind, and William Bill Burns, editor of UFO Magazine. Tune in for more Radio UFO every Tuesday and Saturday, 9 to 11 p.m. on AM 920. WGNU.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Good morning, Miss Liz.
Good morning. Who's this?
This is Dontrell Busby calling you from McLean School. Thank you, Grade Room 209. Thank you, Miss Liz, for the gift from Africa that you gave to everyone. We are watching a movie. The movie is called Ruth. In the movie, the setting is in a village called Jufurey. And Roots was voted by Alex Haley. Miss Liz, we had our Awards Day program, and I received an achievement trophy. Have a good summer. Dr. Busby from 209 for Dignity. Rise Supreme. Love you.
Love you. Thank you.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning wake-up call.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. This is the St. Louis Public Schools Watch edition. I am here. My name is Liz Brown, and I am here with Peter Downs. And, Peter, I do want to let everybody know that at the Metro meeting where Jeff Smith is going to be, the parent assembly is bringing Jeff Smith in to talk. I just want to let everybody know the meeting's at 6:30, but if you think that you can't make it because you want to go get something to eat, have dinner or whatever, dinner is served there.
They have food there,
so you can grab some food there and be part of the assembly meeting. So that's Metro High School. What's the address? How would you tell people to get to Metro? Because you can see it from Lindell, you know, or Lindell and the McDonald's.
It's on McPherson, kind of behind that Lindell shopping center.
Behind where the old salad bowl
of
used to
Sarah.
Be.
Behind where the old Salvo,
where the old Salvo used to be. So that's where Metro is. And come on down to Metro at 6:30 tomorrow night. They'll have food there for you, so you can come straight after work. You can bring your kids. And you really need to just have your voices heard and challenge legislators that have never talked to teachers, legislators that have never talked to administrators, legislators that sound like, you know, the kid in class that's using 15-letter words sounding like they swallowed a thesaurus. Well, Jeff Smith sounds like he swallowed a bunch of words that looping and testing, all these words that apply to education, and they don't use them in the right context, and they don't use them because they know it. They're just trying to impress people to say something about themselves that's not true. And that's kind of what I get whenever I read the bill of Jeff Smith with the prison uniforms and the looping and all that stuff. He's someone that is just disconnected. I mean, do we know that this legislator has ever even talked to any teachers, sat down with any teachers before they wrote this bill up? Or their community? Because I know of no town hall meeting looking for parent input because he's not from St. Louis. He didn't grow up in the city of St. Louis, and he doesn't have kids. I don't have kids either, but I live here, and I've looked at this, and I've been looking at this. So he's truly, like, I don't know, carpetbagger, outsider in looking at this issue.
The legislation, I don't think, makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to legislate. Some of the things he wants to legislate are things that the district has been doing for years. And so what difference does it make? You know, what does he think they'll accomplish by legislating what we're already doing?
Except
I don't know.
Except to say that I've introduced a bill to do something that's already been done.
And there are other things that... you know, he claims is based on other schools, but they don't actually do what he's saying. And parents here have, you know, were up in arms at previous suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of adding 90 minutes to the school day, you know, parents were up in arms just about adding 30 minutes to the school day. They don't want it because a lot of things parents, families do with their kids after school that would interrupt with. And what he's basing it on, what schools, and I've talked to teachers at schools that have the longer day, and it's not a longer school day per se. It's they have an after school program, 9-minute after school program. If you want your child to participate, so that they do their homework there, maybe because you don't feel confident helping them with their homework, so they get athletic activities there, because they aren't getting enough exercise. Those are the things, and we've been doing that for years. We don't do enough because we don't have enough money. The legislature won't appropriate the money.
So where do you when we talk to citizens out here, Peter, about what they should be focusing on, what they should be doing right now, because to some people it may feel like, well, there's a little lull in activity here. There's not this ratcheting up of in-your-face activity. You know, we're not going to Jefferson City this week, or we're not having a sit-in this week. What do you tell people about the reasons to continue to stay connected to and involved, and then what do you tell people to do to stay involved?
I think the reasons are still there. The reasons are the reasons they've always been.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we need to beat back the state attempt to take over schools. We need to beat back the attempt to give everything to the mayor and forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. And those are there. You can write to your legislatures, write to the school board. A lot of that is going to be handled in the courts. But if we win that, there's still real problems in St. Louis public schools that we need to address. We still need smaller class sizes. You know, we still need to teach kids things they need to learn. You know, we still need safer schools. We still need the city to start cleaning up the streets and parks around the schools.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole host of things that need to be done. We need parents to keep an eye on teachers and principals. We need parents to let the district know if they and their children are not being treated with respect. We need to know if moldy food is being served in the cafeteria, because we need to deal with those things.
And don't we also need to continue, Peter, to think this through? Because and talk to our neighbors and our friends about the fact that what is being asked to be done to the city of St. Louis public schools has not been thought through. I mean, that taking away the accreditation of the largest district in the state of Missouri has enormous economic ramifications, has enormous social ramifications, has enormous ramifications for the stability of this city.
Yes, absolutely. You know, yeah, I know we talked a lot about that last week.
Mm-hmm, but
you're right. It's some, we need to reiterate. We need to think a lot about what exactly does this mean if you take away the accreditation.
Of the largest school district in the state of Missouri,
right.
What does it do to the city of St. Louis and the value of homes in the city of St.
Right.
Louis? Nobody, Francis Slay has not thought that through. Francis Slay has not, and all of those surrounding him, Jeff Smith, who supposedly lives in the city of St. Louis and has aspirations to be a congressperson for this area, what does it do for the value of a home to take away the accreditation of an entire district?
Right.
How can I sell my home to a family for its value if a family is saying, I can't move to the city of St. Louis because the entire district has lost its accreditation?
You know, and And think of the timing of it, because it's a double whammy here for St. Louis. You know, nationally, they're talking about, that the realtors are talking about, this year, for the first time since the Great Depression, home values nationally are going to fall.
Since the Depression?
First time in 70 years, home values will fall across this country. Various financial institutions have just announced last week that the number of houses in foreclosure have doubled in the last year.
And
they expect it to keep rising
exactly.
The rest of this year and 2008.
Absolutely.
So this is a period where, you know, and that's going to depress home values. You got all these homes on the market and a lot of people trying to sell to escape foreclosure.
Mm-hmm. And so,
and then you want to throw in, the city of St. Louis, we're going to have unaccredited schools.
And so you have two things. People that want to sell their homes and, let's say, buy another home, a bigger home, in the city of St. Louis. They're already facing difficulty selling their homes because of the market. Now they're going to be facing more difficulty because who's going to want to buy their starter home? Because that's what it is, a starter home for starting off with families. Then you move on to a bigger home.
Right.
Who's going to buy their starter home? Not just simply because of the price of it, but the family. Why would a family move into the city of a family that can't afford to pay for private schools, why would they move into the city and buy your home in a district that says, I don't know if your kid's going to be able to get any scholarships. I don't know if your kid's going to be able to go to college without extra restrictions being placed upon them. What family would make that decision to move into the city? So that's just for the housing piece of it. Then for the other piece of it, why do you want to move into a city where there is no public school, no accredited school district? How do you entice businesses to locate their corporate headquarters in a town where the district has no accreditation, the school district has no accreditation?
Absolutely.
And that's not thinking it through. Francis Slay and all of those that are supporting this are not thinking this through. What does this do to the Catholic schools here in the city of St. Louis that are businesses, that are bringing tax money, that are keeping people here in the city of St. Louis? If they take away the accreditation of the schools, then that means that the kids that live here in the city of St. Louis that are going to Catholic schools right now could transfer to Clayton, could transfer to Ladue.
Absolutely.
And that kills Catholic schools.
That kills businesses around it.
And then the businesses that make their money off of being around a school where the kids go and buy stuff and all kinds of things like that. They haven't thought this through.
Right. And we've spoken a lot of things that the newspapers and TV stations have picked up on after we've spoken there. The students graduating have less options for college, higher restrictions to get in. The private school students being able to go to the county now at public expense, which also means less money left to educate the kids left in public schools.
And greater
cost
to the state now, because now
the state will end up having to pick that up.
Exactly. So now the state's going to have to pay for kids that they weren't having to pay for before.
That's right. And then as things just in the paper the other day, and we had talked about it last week, about firemen and other public employees saying, well, if the school is going to be unaccredited, you can't require us to live here.
And so that means more people
let them move out of the city.
Moving out of the city of St. Louis. They haven't thought this thing through.
Right.
Peter Downs. Next week we're going to do a bunch of things. We're going to talk to some folks from Detroit because they've closed down 30-something schools in the city of Detroit. We're going to talk to some folks from Washington, D.C. as well because they said it was kind of a transitional thing or not quite. I'm not clear on how it's happening because a number of the council members weren't there for the vote.
Oh.
So there's all kinds of stuff going on in Washington, D.C., too. So we're going to be talking about a lot of that next week, too, just to make it clear that what's happening here is all across the country.
It's all across the country.
All
attack
the
on
country.
Urban schools across the country.
And will you please find out if that motion has been
filed? I will find out.
And let me know so I can put it out there.
Okay.
And don't forget that tomorrow, go see Jeff Smith at Metro at 6:30. They'll have food there for you, so you don't have to worry about getting dinner for you and your kids. Be there. Ask him the tough questions because that's your responsibility, and he don't get it, and he don't care. So you need to make him care and make him try to get it. This is Liz Brown. I'll be back in the next hour. Stay with me. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Many. So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albiner.
He did say to me one time that he was a very lonely person and he didn't have friends.
Lucinda Roy may have been one of the few people Soon-Hee Cho reached out to in his short life. She was the 23-year-old student's English professor at Virginia Tech University. Cho was the gunman in this week's massacre at the school. He killed 32 people before taking his own life. ABC's Chris Cuomo says Cho was well-known, but not necessarily in a good way.
Among those who interacted with him on campus, Cho was a big red flag. When asked to write his name, he put down a question mark. He allegedly snapped inappropriate cell phone photos of girls. His demeanor in class so disturbing, some classmates were afraid of him and refused to show up.
Not long ago this morning, the building where the school's president's office is located was evacuated. Police say there was some kind of a threat. They won't go any further at this point. They've since allowed people back into the building. There are reports of dozens killed after a car bombing today in Baghdad's Sadria neighborhood. Earlier today, a car bomb in Sadr City killed at least 30 people. President Bush will be meeting with congressional leaders later today. They're trying not to hammer some kind of an agreement on the future of U.S. involvement in Iraq. More from ABC's Ann Compton at the White House.
This may be more of a showdown with the Democratic leaders Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi coming to insist that President Bush accept some kind of congressional language on a future withdrawal from Iraq. President Bush is flatly insisting that Congress send him only a clean bill, pumping $100 billion more into current combat operations. It is hard to see where compromise can be found. Ann Compton, ABC News, the White House.
Well, the heavy rain is over for the most part. There are still some sprinkles in the Northeast, but the problems are just beginning. For many people in that part of the country affected by the big nor'easter over the weekend, many can't go home due to flooding, and there are still power outages from Maine all the way to North Carolina. This is ABC News. Hello?
Awful night.
Beth?
My erosive acid reflux.
Haven't you heard of Protonix Pantoprazole Sodium?
What?
Protonix. One daily tablet helped control daytime, even nighttime acid reflux symptoms.
Nighttime symptoms, too?
Yep. Even helped repair acid reflux damage. Plus, I save on my Protonix prescription.
Think I could save on my copay?
Check your health plan.
Right. Gotta go.
Where?
To see my doctor about Protonix.
Protonix copays are not less than generic drugs. Prescription Protonix heals acid-related erosions in the esophagus and relieves associated frequent and persistent heartburn. Most patients heal within 8 weeks. Your results may vary. Doctors may prescribe Protonix longer to maintain healing. Studies lasted 12 months. Other serious stomach conditions may still exist. In studies, the most common side effects were headache, diarrhea, and gas. Go to ProtonixSavings.com or call 866-794-ACID to learn more about Protonix, acid reflux disease, and savings. See our ad in the Saturday Evening Post. Ask your doctor if Protonix is right for you. So you're having BlackBerry issues today. Get in line. ABC's Brad Wheelis has more on a huge outage of the addictive handheld devices.
Your BlackBerry needs a fix, so it may be difficult to get email on the go this morning. A major infrastructure problem with the company that makes BlackBerry devices.
Please be advised that we are currently experiencing a service interruption.
The system failed last night. Email is not going through. The company fears that when the problem is fixed, releasing all the backlogged email at once could crash the system again. So messages probably will be released in stages. The short message is, don't count on your BlackBerry to communicate this morning. Brad Wheelis, ABC News.
If the job market is good, why is it taking most people so long to find work? Outplacement firm Challenger Gray & Christmas says the average wait is just over 3.5 months. It also says the wait may be partly the job hunter's doing. They're waiting for better paying offers or maybe for perks like the option to telecommute. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
It's time for this hour's WGNU News Update. I'm Peyton Golston for AM 920. In the news, a Pacific police officer faces 4 felony charges after allegedly breaking into his ex-girlfriend's apartment and beating her with a gun. Police say 22-year-old Stephen Geiser threatened to kill his ex-girlfriend and then fought with a sheriff's deputy. Geiser was charged with burglary, domestic assault, threatening his victim, and resisting arrest. He's presented his chief with his letter of resignation. Geiser's bond is set at $250,000. In other news this morning, it's been 31 years, but police in Granite City are hoping to solve the city's only unsolved murder case. WGNU's Rich LaCroix has the story.
79-year-old Richard Kuby and his 83-year-old wife Anna were murdered March 4, 1976, in the 2400 block of Iowa Street. At the time, DNA testing was not yet available. Anna Kuby's body has been exhumed from Calvary Catholic Cemetery in Edwardsville. It is believed she fought her attacker, and investigators are hoping they can find a suitable DNA sample that will lead to a match. Police have never been able to determine a motive for the double murder.
That's WGNU's Rich LaCroix. In other news this morning, St. Louis Billikens basketball coach Brad Soderberg was fired yesterday after 5 seasons. The school announced the move in a statement that said the success of its new arena, scheduled to open for the 2008-2009 season, was contingent on a program that can contend for a conference championship. SLU was 20-13 last season, Soderberg's first 20-win season and the school's first 20-win season since 1997-98, but the Billikens haven't made it to the NCAA tournament since 2000. That's WGNU News for this hour. I'm Peyton Colston.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Northbound 55 between Herculaneum and Route M. Look for that accident's been cleared. However, there's still stopped traffic at Route M and all the way back through Herculaneum exit. Eastbound 40 between Bellevue and McCausland. Disabled vehicle, right lane's blocked us at McCausland. Look for slow traffic there. Eastbound 70 from Florissant through Goodfellow. Look for stop-and-go traffic due to an earlier accident. That's been cleared. Eastbound 70 at Highway K through 79. Look for slow traffic there. Westbound 40 between Clayton Skinker and 170. Look for slow volume as well. Eastbound 44, heavy volume between Soccer Park all the way through the 270 exchange. Northbound 55 between 3200 South Broadway and 44, look for delays. Northbound Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge, that ramp is slow at the top of that ramp. Eastbound 40 between Spady and McKnight, look for some slowdowns there. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is moving well from the Illinois Bank into the landing. Westbound 70 from Riverview through Goodfellow, look for slow traffic due to an earlier accident. It's been cleared on the ramp to Goodfellow. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street onto the PSB, look for delays. Westbound 270 from 367 through West Florissant, look for some slowdowns. Northbound route, or northbound 270 at 70, look for some slowdowns there as well in the 70 exit lanes. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, look forward to mostly cloudy skies this morning, partly sunny by the afternoon with a high in the mid-60s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 40s. For Thursday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 60s. Thursday evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 40s. And then on Friday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 60s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have overcast skies, 50 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting clouds and 51. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU, your station for the issues that matter most to you.
I'm hearing revolution in the air.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, feel the brother.
Truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown, and we have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Don't forget that this show is archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. So if you've missed an hour, go get your hour at whiterosesociety.org. We are also broadcast live on the World Wide Web all across the world. At you can check that out at lizbrown.com, lizzbrown.com, or wgnu.net. We are broadcast live on the World Wide Web. One of the challenges, I think, that I have had in being on the air during the reign of George W. Bush is keeping up with all of the stories. There are so many big stories. There are so many small stories. There are so many small stories that should be big stories. And as an attorney, I am also overwhelmed with the number of stories pertaining to the violation of the law, the violation of various laws, the violation of laws that you didn't even know existed, signing agreements, or at least the violation of rules. So it should come as no surprise to you all that we're going to talk about a story that should have far more attention in the other media out here. We're going to talk about the case of Turkman versus Ashcroft. We know John Ashcroft. He's the guy that lost to a dead guy here in the state of Missouri. Mel Carnahan beat him even though he was dead. We need to talk about this case. Turkman versus Ashcroft, a lawsuit filed by mistreated detainees. And to help facilitate that conversation, I have joining me from New York City, in fact, Rachel Maripol, on the executive committee of the New York City chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. Rachel, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm outstanding. Rachel, we have about a minute here before we have to take our first break here. But in a nutshell, why should the case of Turkman versus Ashcroft be getting more attention?
Well, I do think it's an important case. Basically, the case challenges the fact that shortly after 9/11, hundreds of non-citizens were swept up, really across the country, but we focus specifically on individuals arrested in New York and New Jersey. Now, these people were arrested solely because of the religion, the color of their skin, and their country of origin. Because of those factors, they were held as suspects in the terrorist investigation, even though the only laws that they had broken were civil immigration laws. They were here out of status or working unlawfully. But those violations gave our government, arguably, the power to hold them for months on end while they were investigated of any connection to terrorism. Now, during the time that they were held for investigation, they were severely mistreated, held in ultra-restrictive confinement, and beaten by guards.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about, it's really sad that we have to have this conversation, but we have a conversation about how that's in violation to the laws and the rule of law here in this country. I'm having a conversation with Rachel Maripol. She is on the executive committee of the New York City chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. We're talking about Turkman versus Ashcroft, a lawsuit filed by on behalf of mistreated detainees. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with us.
Miss today's Sloan Ranger Show on WGNU. Missouri Congressman Todd Akin joins Lloyd just after 5:30. Then in the 6 o'clock hour, Krista Kafer of the Independent Women's Forum discusses the boy crisis in American education. That's all on the Sloan Ranger with Lloyd Sloan. 5 till 7 weeknights on AM 920 WGNU.
School, church, civic, and other nonprofit organizations often have tight budgets. At WGNU, we understand that and remind you that we can help. If you know of a nonprofit group that would like WGNU to help promote events and ongoing programs free of charge, just send a fax with all the information to our public service department at area code 314-454-6609. Requests must be submitted 2 weeks in advance of any event. WGNU Radio reserves the right to edit or reject any submission because of time constraints and objectionable or commercial content.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. My conversation this hour is with Rachel Maripol. She's on the executive committee of the New York City chapter of the National Lawyers Guild, and she's joining us from New York to talk about the case of Turkman versus Ashcroft. And Rachel, you were talking about how this is a case that people were locked up solely because of their religion, because of the color of their skin. And talk to us about the treatment that they received, and how do we know that they received this type of treatment?
Sure. Well, to start off, about 80 men who were arrested in this manner were held at Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn. Now, MDC is a federal facility that generally holds pretrial detainees. At MDC, they were put in a portion of the facility called the Administrative Maximum Special Housing Unit. People refer to this as the hole.
Wait a minute. I just got to slow down just for a second. They were put in the hole?
Yeah. Hole, it's so bad that they didn't even have a system of restriction that tight at MDC until the 9/11 detainees were brought there. They changed what was already a very restrictive housing unit to make it even more restrictive to handle these, you know, ultra-dangerous terrorist suspects. So in the ADMAC SHU, as we call it, the detainees were locked in their cells 23 to 24 hours a day. The lights were on in their cells 24 hours a day to make sleep nearly impossible. They were denied the ability to practice their religion, such that, you know, almost all of them were Muslim. And when they would ask the guards what time it was so that they would know when to pray, the guards would refuse to tell them. Their Qurans were confiscated repeatedly, and guards threw the Qurans on the floor on occasion. And throughout all of this, they were subjected to systematic verbal and physical abuse from the very moment that they got to the facility, as they were brought in an armed convoy of officers in riot gear. They were brought into the facility, pulled out of a van, and shoved up against the wall at the entrance to the facility against a T-shirt that had a picture of the Twin Towers and the American flag on it. And it said, "These colors don't run." And the T-shirt was stained with blood from all of the detainees that had come before them and been smashed up against this symbol of patriotism.
And what were their charges?
Well, they were charged solely with violations of the immigration law. You know, most of the people, maybe they had overstayed a 6-month visa and were now here for 9 or 10 months, or they were working unlawfully when all they had was a tourist visa. These are civil immigration violations. Now, these people came to the attention of the FBI mostly through anonymous tips and police officers' own racial profiling. So we had a situation where someone might call into the FBI hotline that was set up shortly after 9/11 and say, you know, "My neighbor's Arab, he keeps strange hours, I think he might be a terrorist." Now, on that much information, on that kind of, you know, evidence, the FBI would dispatch a team of FBI, INS, and NYPD officers to the person's apartment. They would interrogate the individual at the apartment and anybody else that they encountered along the way. And if at the end of those interviews the officers determined that the individuals were here in violation of the immigration law, whether or not there was any evidence of connection to terrorism, the men were arrested and held as suspects to the terrorism investigation.
And how long were those men locked up?
Well, it varied. Some people were released after several months. Some people were held upwards of a year. The release was dependent on their clearance by the FBI. So we have the presumption of innocence turned completely on its head. You know, most of them accepted voluntary departure or deportation orders rather quickly. They agreed that they were here unlawfully, and they agreed to leave the country. But they were held long after they could have been deported, solely because the FBI had not yet cleared them of any connection to terrorism.
How does one get cleared of a connection to terrorism? How does that work?
Well, that's a very hard question. I mean, I think what was basically involved was a limited FBI investigation. The FBI is going to, you know, check to see if their name shows up on any watch list, maybe interview some of their relatives or friends.
But
something like that.
But
of course, you know, the FBI is so strapped after 9/11 actually following up on real leads that it took months to accomplish even that minimal investigation.
But there aren't any regulations or rules or laws written down that comprise what being cleared consists of.
Oh, absolutely not. This was a complete flying by the seat of your pants type of operation here. I mean, nothing like this has ever happened before, or nothing exactly like this. Of course, we see some precedent for this in history, unfortunately.
So how does one file a lawsuit on behalf of people that have been deported?
Well, it is, practically speaking, pretty difficult. My clients all live in their home countries now. Most of them, a lot of them are back in Egypt, Pakistan. Some of them are in Canada. There's no bar at all to filing a lawsuit when individuals are out of the country. It just means that, practically speaking, it's more difficult and more expensive. I communicate with my clients mostly by telephone and email, and I visit them as well. Of course, these kind of communications are, you know, even more nerve-wracking since we know of the NSA's warrantless wiretap program, and we have reason to fear that some of our communications may be intercepted, as my clients were suspected terrorists.
How willing are your clients to pursue the United States of America after being subjected to body cavity searches and manacled and beaten and treated in such an inhumane way? They're still willing to sue?
Yeah, I mean, it really is a testament to just how important they consider getting justice in this case. I mean, they are all so devoted to getting a statement that what happened to them is wrong. Now, I think that's their primary goal here. It's not, you know, it's not about money damages. It's about, you know, whether this can happen again, whether this can happen to other people like them living in the United States, and whether they can get something like an apology for how they were treated. And of course, you know, also victory in a case like this would clear their name in their minds to a certain degree. You know, some of them still face problems in their home countries because other people think that, well, if you were detained by the United States as a suspected terrorist for a year, you probably did something wrong. So they see this as a way to vindicate, you know, their name and to get some justice for what happened to them.
Did they have any kind of evidence, did the FBI have any kind of evidence that connected any of these men to anything that has to do with terrorism?
Well, I haven't gotten a chance to see all the evidence against every single individual detained. But I can say that shortly after 9/11, in 2003, the Office of the Inspector General released a report that was very critical of the 9/11 detentions and outlined the clearance process as well as all the abuse that occurred.
I mean, it was 198 pages.
Yes, it's extremely long and extremely critical of the government. An excellent report that really corroborates a lot of what we've complained about. And you can see in that report documents the type of tips that people were arrested on and the lack of any real evidence against them. And we also have to look at the outcome. You know, almost everyone held in this manner was deported without criminal charges. And those who were charged received, you know, minor charges related to their immigration status, such as falsifying INS documents or credit card fraud, nothing related to terrorism.
What can we learn about Attorney General John Ashcroft, former Attorney General John Ashcroft, as a result of this lawsuit? What do we know more about him?
Well, he was really the architect of this policy. You know, he's the one that initially directed individuals to go out and use every means at their disposal to arrest individuals in the terrorism investigation. Now, what he basically ordered his people to do is use the immigration law, which because of the civil nature of the immigration law and because of the profound power that the executive has over non-citizens in this country, you can detain individuals under the immigration law on far less of a showing of evidence.
Okay, and hold that thought, please, because we have to take a break.
Sure.
I'm talking to Rachel Maripol. She's on the executive committee of the New York City chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. She's joining us from New York. We're talking about Turkman versus Ashcroft, a lawsuit by mistreated detainees. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with me.
Good morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather for this 8 o'clock hour. Eastbound Gravois at Highway PP, there's a report of an accident. Northbound 55 between Route Z and Route M, stop-and-go traffic due to an earlier accident. Eastbound 40 from McKnight through McCausland, look for a disabled vehicle in the right lane. McCausland, now there's an accident on the right shoulder at Hanley, so just use some caution and slow down, give yourself a break. Northbound 55 from 44 through Poplar Street Bridge, look for delays. Eastbound 70 from Highway K through 79, look for slow traffic. Westbound 40 between McCausland and 170, look for some slowdowns there. Westbound 70 between Poplar Street Bridge and Memorial, look for an accident's been cleared, but there are still some delays, especially on northbound 55 rolling into the city. Northbound 270 between Tesson Ferry and Doherty Ferry, look for some slowdowns around the 44 exchange. Eastbound 44 from Soccer Park through 270, look for some delays there as well. Northbound Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge, that ramp is a little heavy at the top. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street into the Poplar Street Bridge, look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is moving well into the landing at this hour. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, mostly cloudy early in the morning, becoming mostly sunny by this afternoon, high in the mid-60s this evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 40s. Thursday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 60s. Thursday evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 40s. And Friday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 60s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 50 degrees under cloudy skies. Lambert Field is reporting 52. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Rogers, host of Radio UFO, Uncommon Facts and Observations. On my show, I've had some wonderful guests, like Dennis Balthaser, the coordinator of the 60th anniversary of the Roswell incident, Felix Clairvoyant, a priest with the Raelian Movement, an organization that believes that mankind was made from a higher civilization of mankind, and William Bill Burns, editor of UFO Magazine. Tune in for more Radio UFO every Tuesday and Saturday, 9 to 11 p.m. on AM 920 WGNU.
Hi, this is Phil.
And I'm Tim, and we're your hosts from The Real Deal with Phil and Tim.
Tune in every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. for real news.
Or Phil's version of the news on the radio.
That's right. You can listen to my opinion or you can listen to his, but we all know we'll be listening to my opinion. You can also tune in for interviews with senators and other interesting people, like me.
So make sure you tune in every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 for The Real Deal with Phil and Tim.
I'm Phil Person of Person Roofing. We've been in business about 17 years, and we've advertised on WGNU almost that whole time. We have installed over 5,000 roofs in that period of time, and today I have a customer here. His name is Mr. Merriweather. Mr. Merriweather, I think we installed a roof on your house about 10 or 12 years ago.
Yes, you did.
Recently, you had a little storm damage on that roof, didn't you?
I sure did.
Can you tell what happened?
Yeah, Mr. Person come out and repaired my roof and didn't charge me anything.
And you haven't had any problems since we did a repair?
I sure haven't.
Even though your warranty was out, we still came out and took care of your roof.
Right.
We try to service our customers, and if you would like to have a new roof, call us at 361-7127. That's Person Roofing at 361-7127. All phases of roofing.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@wgnu.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
The Struggle for Fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. I'm talking this morning to to Rachel Maripol. She's on the executive committee of the New York City chapter of the National Lawyers Guild, and she's joining us from New York City. We're talking about the case of Turkman v. Ashcroft. And Rachel, you were talking about John Ashcroft.
Sure. I was talking about how John Ashcroft really created the policies that we challenge here through the lawsuit at the Center for Constitutional Rights. Now, Ashcroft directed that individuals misuse the immigration law as a way to get around the protections that our Constitution provides to everyone when they're investigated for a crime. Now, basically, everyone in this country, if you're going to be arrested for a criminal offense, has the right to not be arrested unless there's probable cause that you've committed a crime. And that probable cause is reviewed by a judge shortly after your arrest, 24 to 48 hours after arrest. Now, under the immigration law, individuals can be arrested if there's a reason to believe that they're in violation of the immigration law. But what happened after 9/11 is that individuals were held under the immigration law long after they could have been deported, long after there was any reason for their detention under immigration law. So there's no reason anymore that this civil set of laws should give detention power, and yet this power continues to be used, to be misused, to hold individuals in a way that citizens could not be detained.
And so this is a lawsuit against Ashcroft, but it also includes FBI Director Robert Mueller.
That's correct, and also the former commissioner of the INS, James Ziegler. We've also sued many of the individual officers and supervisors and wardens at MDC who were directly responsible for the abuse of my clients.
And what's the status of this lawsuit right now, Rachel?
Well, it's in a somewhat complicated procedural position. The high-level government officials moved to dismiss the case shortly after we filed it. They argued that what they did didn't violate the law, and even if it did violate the law, they couldn't be expected to know that they acted reasonably. The district court judge decided that motion about a year ago, and the district court judge allowed all of our claims challenging the conditions of confinement and the abuse at MDC to go forward. And he allowed those claims to go forward against all the defendants, including the high-level government officials. However, he dismissed our claims challenging the fact of the detention itself. We brought due process, Fourth Amendment, and equal protection challenges to the fact that our clients were held so much longer than necessary to deport them for the purpose of criminal investigation. And the judge held that didn't state a claim, that what we complained about wasn't illegal. So we've appealed that portion of the decision up to the appellate court, to the Second Circuit.
Did the release of the 198-page report from the Inspector General, did that help with your case?
Absolutely. We actually amended our complaint after that report was released to include the report as an exhibit to our complaint and to add several new claims that we became aware of after the report was released. The report really is, you know, is great evidence for us because it details
Absolutely.
A lot of the policies we complain about.
So where are we now?
Well, right now we're on appeal in the Second Circuit. The defendants have appealed the portion of the case that they lost. So we're all in appeal in the Second Circuit. We're in briefing right now. At the same time, our claims challenging the conditions of confinement and abuse at MDC have been in discovery for several years now. So that means we're in a fact-finding process.
And, again, this was a lawsuit that was filed when? What year?
2002.
Now, with respect to some of the treatment that these were all men, right?
Yes,
okay.
They were.
That these men received, has any prison guard, has anybody been punished for this?
Well, some of the guards, some of the defendants in our case, some of the guards at MDC did receive some internal Bureau of Prisons discipline, demotions, suspensions, that kind of thing. Pretty minimal discipline, really. There haven't been any direct criminal indictments out of our case. It is interesting to note, however, that last week, three of the defendants in our case were indicted on federal charges for abuse of other prisoners at MDC.
How surprising is that? If you're abusing somebody, you don't stop.
No, exactly. And the fact that, you know, the abuse that they were just indicted on is alleged to have occurred from 2002 to 2006, which is, you know, starting right after my clients were released from MDC through almost the present day. So clearly we have allegations of systemic abuse at this detention center. And, of course, it's probably not just this detention center. As I hear stories at the Center for Constitutional Rights every day about abuse of prisoners in prisons and detention centers across the country.
Now, does a case like this have a time limit? Does it have a statute of limitations in terms of when it has to be filed? Because if you're successful with this, couldn't other people file the same type of a case? But unless
there is a statute of limitations. In general, it's 3 years for a case like this. However, our case is actually filed as a class action,
mm-hmm.
but we don't have class certification yet. Basically, when you file a class action, you have to ask the court to certify that it should move forward in that way. And we won't have a chance to do that until after the appeals court decides the appeal.
So you're...
If it's certified as a class action, then my clients can represent all of the individuals that were arrested in this manner and held at Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn and Passaic County Jail in New Jersey. So we're hoping to get justice not just for our individual clients, but for as many of the post-9/11 detainees as possible.
Who is Turkman?
Turkman is, his first name is Ibrahim Turkman.
Mm-hmm.
He's from Turkey. He was actually held at Passaic County Jail in New Jersey, not at MDC. Two of the clients in the case were held at Passaic County Jail, and five of them were held at the Metropolitan Detention Center.
And have any of the men that you filed this suit on behalf of, have any of them given up and asked to be taken out of the case or have disappeared on you or anything like that?
One of my clients actually did voluntarily dismiss the case. Basically because he couldn't proceed any further. I mean, I think that it's largely based on the trauma that he was still experiencing, based on what happened to him at the Metropolitan Detention Center and his, you know, lack of interest in continuing to have to relive that trauma, by going forward with a lawsuit. You know, unfortunately, part of prosecuting a lawsuit is that you have to tell your story over and over again. And you have to tell it to, you know, government attorneys who are questioning you for hours on end about what happened to you. And that's a really hard thing to do, and not everybody can do it.
And basically, you're being challenged by the same people that either did it or were complicit in the doing of it to you.
Sure, or their attorneys anyway,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Seven of my clients did actually come back to the United States to be deposed in the case, to answer questions by the opposing attorneys.
How did they get it back in the United States?
Well, it's actually the first time that this has ever happened, to my knowledge, in a civil case in the United States. The United States government gave them permission to come back into the country, despite the fact that they were barred from returning to the country because of their immigration violations. But the government gave them permission to come back in for a week, specifically for the depositions in this case. Now, they had to agree to be under the custody of the U.S. Marshals Service the whole time. They were in a hotel in Midtown Manhattan, and they were confined to that hotel. They couldn't leave. They were guarded by armed guards at the exits. It was a very intense experience.
That had to be so stressful.
Oh, it was terrifying for everyone involved, I have to say. I mean, can you imagine the courage it takes to come back and put yourself in the custody of the government that abused you and held you, you know, without explanation for months on end?
That really has to go down as one of the most courageous acts. I don't know a whole lot of people that would have been able to do that or willing to do that.
No.
So were you able to see, did you get in the case early enough to actually see the evidence of the abuse that was inflicted on these men?
I was not here at the Center for Constitutional Rights when the case was first brought. I was graduating from law school at that point, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my boss, Bill Goodman, who was the first attorney to bring the case, actually did, you know, visit some of our clients while they were still detained at MDC. So got to see them and see the circumstances they were being held in and witness firsthand some of what was going on. So people at CCR were initially involved quite early, but I only became involved in the case about 6 months later.
We're going to take a quick break. I'm talking to Rachel Maripol. She's on the executive committee of the New York City chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. That's in New York City. Stay with us. My name is Liz Brown. You know the place to shop for all your appliance needs? Sears, 3425 Union, Black-owned and Black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Praise the Lord, St. Louis. This is Elder Ernest Doris, yours truly, doing my duty, live in the Lou on WGNU, 920 on your AM dial. It's the Highway to Heaven radio broadcast every Saturday at 8:30 in the AM. So tune in for the latest church news and the best gospel music in town.
This is Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down at 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the conspiracy hunter right here at WGNU 920 a.m.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920. WGNU discusses the issues that matter most to you every day. And if you have a relationship problem with a friend, coworker, or family member, it really matters to me. So call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA. Tune in every Monday through Friday afternoon from 2 until 4 and take on the day with me, Dr. Laura, on AM 920 WGNU.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify.
At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Talk to me while I'm listening now. All this love has a voice that we both can hear. Before you let it go, greatest love I've ever known, won't you be? Talk to me while I'm.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. In the 9 o'clock hour, I'm going to be talking to Naomi Steiner. She's with CRU. Who's CRU? The Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. And we're going to be talking about those missing 5 million emails from the White House. We're also going to be having a conversation with a man that has a lot to say about the war in Iraq, Fernando Suarez del Solar. He's going to be talking about his son. He's going to be talking about his experience of losing a son and his position on supporting the troops and being against the war. That there is no contradiction. Fernando is going to join us also in the next hour. Right now I'm talking to Rachel Maripol. She's on the executive committee of the New York City chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. We're talking about the lawsuit that was filed in 2002 and continues today, Turkmen versus Ashcroft, and it's a lawsuit about filed on behalf of mistreated detainees. And Rachel, there are other lawsuits out there as well. We have detainees at Guantanamo, the case of Doe versus Bush.
That's true. And the Center for Constitutional Rights, the legal organization that I work at, that brought the Turkmen lawsuit, also represents hundreds of detainees at Guantanamo. CCR was actually the first organization that sued on behalf of Guantanamo detainees and won the case in the Supreme Court, holding that the federal courts have the power to review those detentions.
And where is that case? And I guess this is a different type of a case because we have Doe versus Bush as opposed to Turkmen versus Ashcroft, who we don't know the names of the people. That kind of underscores the disconnect of trying to file lawsuits on behalf of those that are detained in Guantanamo.
Sure, and, you know, the case is different as well in that all the individuals at Guantanamo are, you know, most of them are still there. So we're in a situation at Guantanamo where we're just trying to get these people hearings at this point, you know, trying to find out whether they should be detained at all, rather than a position after release where they're seeking compensation for what happened to them.
And I'm certain, how would you compare the access to your clients in the Turkmen case as opposed to the Doe case?
Oh, well, there are some parallels, although, of course, Guantanamo is a much harder situation. You know, initially at the Metropolitan Detention Center, there was a complete blackout on all communications between the detainees and the outside world. So they weren't allowed any phone calls, any letters, any visits. Attorneys who went to MDC to visit them were told that they weren't there. This blackout lasted for several weeks to a month or so, and then communications alleviated a little bit so that there was some access that attorneys could have to their clients. Now, at Guantanamo, of course, the government has complete control over who could visit the base, and you need security clearance to get down there and to interview a client.
And I just marvel at the fact that this is taking place in the United States of America, that we have these types of things that are going on to keep attorneys from their clients, and it's happening in the light of day. How do you deal with something like that?
Well, I guess you've got to just keep fighting, or else it gets too depressing to think about. You know, I think that the important thing is to recognize what's going on, to be involved in the struggle against it, and to take strength from the fact that you're part of the struggle, and that there's so many great people out there, so many intelligent, motivated, devoted people out there in the fight as well.
Has the change in administration, because it's had so not change in administration, change in the makeup of the political structure that governs the United States, the House mm-hmm. and the Senate, has that in the last election, has that had an impact on you? Do you think, will that have an impact on these lawsuits?
Well, we're hopeful. Now, of course, the last Congress passed the Military Commission Act, which is just a reprehensible piece of legislation that takes from the Guantanamo detainees the right to challenge their detention in the federal courts. Now, this is the right of habeas corpus, which is, you know, enshrined in our Constitution and dates back to the time of the Magna Carta. The MCA, the Military Commission Act, strips that right from these individuals. And we are hopeful that, you know, that the new Congress will repair the damage that was done.
And in terms of the people that are at Guantanamo, do we have any idea of how many? Do we have any idea of the sexes? Do we have any idea of the genders? Do we have?
Yeah. Well, we believe that it's all men at Guantanamo, and that at this point there's just under 400 individuals detained. Now, at the height of the detentions, there were as many as 700 people there, but a lot of people have left, have been sent back to their own countries, and only a few new people have come in the last several years.
And one more thing that has always been curious to me. You talked about in the case of Turkmen v. Ashcroft how they created these supermax type of facilities to accommodate these men that haven't been charged with any crime. Are you at all concerned or about the new facilities that have been built at Guantanamo?
Absolutely. I mean, the conditions that individuals are being detained at in Guantanamo are startling in the restrictive nature. You know, complete isolation and sensory deprivation. And, you know, we see the result of that kind of treatment, which is that individuals have attempted, some of them successfully, to kill themselves, that individuals are on hunger strike repeatedly. They're trying to find any way that they can to protest against the way that they're being treated and to protest against their prolonged detention without charges, without evidence. And unfortunately, the only means of protest they have at their disposal are really protests that injure themselves.
And do we have any idea about the ages of these men that are at Guantanamo?
Well, we've heard reports that individuals who are very young were initially at Guantanamo. Now, I don't have information as to who is the youngest person that is there at this moment, but we do know that several juveniles or individuals who were juveniles when they were arrested have gone through Guantanamo.
And in terms of the lawsuit of Doe v. Bush, there's no end date in sight.
All the lawsuits, unfortunately, at this point are dependent on what's going to happen with the Detainee Treatment Act. And, you know, the Supreme Court, the D.C. Circuit Court recently, about 2 months ago, held that the Military Commission Act, which I spoke of earlier, does in fact take away the right of these individuals to go into the federal court to challenge their detention. And all they're left with are these military tribunals at Guantanamo. And that once they go through these military tribunals, they can then have some very limited review of the tribunals at the D.C. Circuit Court. So individuals are in the position of they now have to go through that process before they can get back into federal court directly to challenge their detention. Unfortunately, that means, you know, at least another year of detention before anyone's going to see any real evidentiary hearing.
And we're constantly being told out here that Guantanamo is the place for the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst. Do we have any evidence of that?
Absolutely not. In fact, many individuals, many officers coming out of Guantanamo have talked about the fact that the majority of the people there are low-level people, that they're not the worst of the worst, that they're people that were sold for bounty in Afghanistan or perhaps low-level Taliban soldiers. These aren't all high-level al-Qaeda operatives by any stretch of the imagination.
Does anybody have any idea about the cost that Guantanamo has cost this nation?
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't have those figures myself, but I imagine someone must have done some analysis. I can't direct you to a source, though. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, and tell people where they can go to find out more about the case of Turkman versus Ashcroft and Doe v. Bush.
Absolutely. Information on those cases and all of our other cases can be found on our website, which is ccr-ny.org. And we try to update the website frequently so that any new developments are included. And I really encourage people to visit it to find out more about the cases and how you can get involved.
Rachel Maripol, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Wake Up Call.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Take care.
Take care.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, in the next hour, I'm going to be talking about the 5 million loss, my dog ate it, emails from the Bush administration. And we're also going to be talking to a father who lost a son in the war in Iraq and why he is fighting against this war and how the fact that there is no contradiction between supporting the troops and being against the war. Fernando Suarez del Solar is going to be joining us in the next hour also. Stay with me.
More and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. What finally set Soon-Hee Cho off? The gunman in this week's Virginia Tech massacre killed himself after he gunned down 32 people. He was a 23-year-old English major from suburban Washington, D.C. His roommate, Joe Ost, watched Cho's behavior change recently.
He started getting up a lot earlier. Like, usually throughout the year, he would get up at maybe 7 or so. But past couple of weeks, he got up at, like, 6 or 5:30 even.
Tensions are still high on campus. One building was evacuated earlier today. More from ABC's Aaron Katursky in Blacksburg.
Daria, the threat over at Burris Hall turned out to be unfounded, but this campus is still reeling from what went on here on Monday. And even though the threat was unfounded, it really shook some people up. As one woman was describing being evacuated from the building this morning, her voice was shaking. Police have not described the nature of the threat, but they did come in with rifles, with bomb-sniffing dogs, and crime tape to keep people away. Daria.
With classes canceled till Monday, students were encouraged to go home for a few days. Some stayed on campus for a vigil last night. Others made the trip to be there.
We're just coming here tonight to try and, you know, support other people to help deal with it ourselves.
She goes to Liberty University. It's been a violent day in Baghdad. A series of suicide bombings left many dead.
Well, the most destructive explosion was in Sadr City, the big Shiite slum, when a suicide bomber crashed into a checkpoint and killed about 35 people. Hours earlier, a parked car blew up in central Baghdad, killed 10. Another car blew up nearby, killing 8.
That's ABC's Hillary Brown in Baghdad. That death toll, by the way, is now up to about 90 people. Still trying to use your BlackBerry? Good luck if you are. A service outage, a huge one, has rendered almost all of the handhelds in the Western Hemisphere useless. We are being told, though, that service is beginning to come back. This is ABC News.
Hello?
Awful night.
Beth?
My erosive acid reflux.
Haven't you heard of Protonix pantoprazole sodium?
What?
Protonix. One daily tablet helped control daytime, even nighttime acid reflux symptoms.
Nighttime symptoms, too?
Yep, even helped repair acid reflux damage. Plus, I save on my Protonix prescription.
Think I could save on my copay?
Check your health plan.
Right. Gotta go.
Where?
To see my doctor about Protonix.
Protonix copays are not less than generic drugs. Prescription Protonix heals acid-related erosions in the esophagus and relieves associated frequent and persistent heartburn. Most patients heal within 8 weeks. Your results may vary. Doctors may prescribe Protonix longer to maintain healing. Studies lasted 12 months. Other serious stomach conditions may still exist. In studies, the most common side effects were headache, diarrhea, and gas. Go to ProtonixSavings.com or call 866-794-ACID to learn more about Protonix, acid reflux disease, and savings. See our ad in the Saturday Evening Post. Ask your doctor if Protonix is right for you.
Ethanol may be good when it comes to your wallet, but the alternative fuel for gasoline may do a number on your health, ABC's Gil Gross has a story.
Most environmentalists have been pushing for more ethanol in gasoline, but a study in the journal Environmental Science and Technology says in already high smog areas, such as in the Northeast or here in Los Angeles, ethanol could make things worse, even adding 200 deaths to the 4,700 or so Americans who die now every year from ozone-caused respiratory problems. Other scientists say since ethanol will reduce greenhouse gases, it will eventually save lives, not harm them. Gil Gross, ABC News, Los Angeles.
Bald may be beautiful, but for guys who aren't ready yet to embrace the chrome dome look, help is on the way. A Florida company says it's invented a handheld laser groomer. It claims will promote hair growth. In other words, it'll comb hair into your comb over. But it won't be cheap for these new locks. It'll set you back about $550. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
And here's an update of WGNU News. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news this morning, a Pacific police officer faces four felony charges after allegedly breaking into his ex-girlfriend's apartment and attacking her with a gun. Police say 22-year-old Stephen Geiser threatened to kill the ex-girlfriend and then fought with a sheriff's deputy. Geiser was charged with burglary, domestic assault, threatening his victim, and resisting arrest. He's presented his chief with his letter of resignation. Geiser's bond is set at $250,000. In other news this morning, a former mayor of the city of St. Peter's is behind bars. WGNU's Rich LaCroix has that story.
35-year-old Sean Brown began serving his 18-month sentence Thursday in federal prison for taking a bribe. He is serving his time in a minimum security installation near Duluth, Minnesota that has 850 inmates and was formerly an Air Force base. Brown resigned as mayor in October after admitting that he solicited and accepted nearly $3,000 from a company that installs red light cameras. Authorities say Brown threatened to veto the legislation authorizing the cameras unless the company paid him.
That's WGNU's Rich LaCroix. Finally, at this hour, Riverview Gardens High School was on lockdown for a short time yesterday afternoon. That came after a student's grandmother phoned in a threat. School officials say the threat stemmed from a fight that broke out at the school between 10 girls shortly after their lunch hour. A parent of one of the girls involved in the fight called the district, and a short time after that, the grandmother of the same student called the district and made a threat. The lockdown was canceled around 2 yesterday afternoon, and students were dismissed shortly thereafter. That's this hour's update of WGNU News. I'm Peyton Colston.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at this hour's traffic and your weather. Southbound Lindbergh and McDonald Boulevard, there's a report of an accident there. Hall Street at Adelaide, traffic lights are not working. They're on red flash, so treat it as a four-way stop. McDonald Boulevard over 270, those traffic lights are still not working, and it's also creating some delays. Westbound 5570 into the Poplar Street Bridge is moving well. Westbound Kingbridge traffic's moving well into the landing. Westbound 64 from Ball Avenue into the 5570 split looks good. Northbound 270 at 44 is on the move, and northbound 270 just south of 70, look for no problems to report. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79, look for no delays. And then again from east of Earth City Expressway through St. Charles Rock Road, look for no slowdowns there. Eastbound 44 is looking good around a 270 exchange. Northbound 55 from Butler Hill into the 255-270 interchange is moving well. That has been a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, mostly cloudy till this afternoon and becoming partly sunny with a high in the mid-60s. For this evening, partly cloudy, low in the lower 40s. Thursday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 60s. Thursday evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 40s. And Friday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 60s again. Currently, we have 52 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Lambert Fields reporting 54 under some clouds. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU, your station for the issues that matter most.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother.
The truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who would dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number, 1-877-920-WGNU. This show is broadcast live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net or lizbrown.com, lizzbrown.com. Also, the show is archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. So, there's no excuse. You need to get up. You need to get to me. 5 million. 5 million. There is a report that is coming out that the executive office of the president, that would be George W. Bush, has lost over 5 million emails. We need to talk about this. How do you lose 5 million anything? How does someone lose 5 million anything? We're going to have that conversation this morning with the chief counsel with CREW, that's Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, Ann Wiseman. And good morning.
Good morning.
5 million?
Well, let me tell you something, Lisa. Actually, we are now told that the number is likely much higher than that, and that when they did an estimate, 5 million was on the low end of the estimate. Yeah, because we are talking about hundreds of days in a 2.5 year period. Hundreds of days in a 2.5 year period that White House email are simply missing.
Well, how did we come to this? How did we come to find this?
Well, we have sources, people who are, and I can't disclose their identities. They've come to us in confidentiality. They're people who are definitely were or are currently in a position to know. We had them come to us independently, and they told us the same story, so we have a high degree of confidence. And I think the fact that Dana Perino, in her press briefing last Friday, when confronted with the 5 million figure, didn't contest it, suggests that, yeah, they're going to live with 5 million because the number probably is much higher.
Yeah, I can live with 5 million. I can live with 5 million.
Yeah, because what if it's 15? I mean, I don't know, but I am now told by our sources that the 5 million was really on the low end of the estimate.
Now, how are these, why are these emails that should not have been deleted?
Because there is a law that the president and all of his staff are subject to called the Presidential Records Act. And basically that law says you need to preserve the records of your administration. Why? Because they belong to the people. They're our records. They're our historical data about what you did and how you do it. And it says not only do you have to preserve your records, you actually have to create records. So if you have a meeting in which something important happens, you're supposed to make a record of that meeting. This is not a new obligation. Other administrations were subject to it. In fact, the Clinton administration got into a lot of trouble towards the end because they had a problem with their email preservation system. And at the time, there were all sorts of, you know, criminal inquiries and congressional inquiries, and people said, whoa, wait a minute, you know, if email is missing, how can we get, you know, the documents we need to do our oversight work? So it's important because there's a law, and it's important because without records, Congress can't do oversight, the courts can't do oversight, and the people can't know what's going on.
And what is at risk here in terms of this particular case? Because this has come up as a result, let me ask you, has this come up as a result of the investigation of the firings of the attorney generals by Alberto Gonzalez?
Well, I think what that did was focus attention on the fact that there were all these missing RNC email, and the fact that White House, you know, high-level White House officials were using outside email accounts, and it seemed like they were doing so to avoid having a record created.
Well, wait a minute. It seems like?
Yeah. I think we can say with confidence that Carl Rove used outside email accounts 95% of the time. We know why that is.
And is that against the law?
It's not that it's against the law. Again, though, it gets back to if you're going to be conducting official White House business, you need to preserve the records. So if he did it using an outside email account, then he should have printed out a copy of those emails. If there was no way that they were electronically stored, and I don't see how they could be because they went, you know, through a different server. So we're not saying that it was wrong of him to use his RNC email account. That might be against other laws. I don't know. But what we are saying is that he had an obligation to preserve records. And if he was doing that to avoid that obligation, that's a real problem. And I think it's also a problem because there was an inquiry, a criminal inquiry. Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald was looking precisely into Karl Rove's role in outing Valerie Plame's identity as a covert agent for the CIA. And he had sent a retention letter to the White House. The Department of Justice had sent one saying, you know, preserve records. So in the face of that, if Karl Rove was purposely deleting records, I think that's a problem. That's obstruction of justice.
And some people might say, well, you know, in true Bush-esque fashion, it's just too hard to keep track of these emails. Are they responsible for putting in place systems
that can be done? You know, they're no different than anybody else in the federal government, except that they're under a different statute. The rest of the government, all the other government agencies, are under something called the Federal Records Act, and they have a requirement to preserve agency heads and other high-level officials at federal agencies, they use BlackBerries. They may even use outside email accounts. They use laptops. They use their desktop computers to send messages, and they have to come up with a system, and there is one in place to preserve them. And the archivist, which administers all these laws, comes out with guidance and says, if you're going to use electronic records and electronic, you know, email, here's what you need to do to preserve it. If you're going to use an outside email account, a non-governmental account, you still have to preserve. Maybe you got to print out a copy of your message. So the idea that somehow they're different from anybody else is flat wrong.
And the other piece of this is that, I mean, it's almost like we have two things going on. We have the disappearance of five million plus emails, but we also have the refusal to recover or try and recover the 5 million plus. Talk to us about that.
That's really, you know, it's not just about the fact that 5 million plus have gone missing, which is shocking in and of itself. What's really especially shocking is that the White House was told this in the fall of 2005, and they were given a plan to recover the missing email, and they never did it. Not only that, they're using a system to store their email that they know doesn't work, and we have proof of that. 5+ million email are gone, and they have refused to put in place a proper system to restore email and to make sure that the email that they're saving is properly being saved.
I guess it sounds like a winning system to them.
Yeah.
that you can't recover.
The big losers.
So can we say, is it fair to say that these 5 million plus emails are gone forever? Who's supposed to be trying to get them now?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, you know, all sorts of forensic experts have said, you know, nothing's ever really gone forever. And the fact that the White House was presented with a plan to recover them suggests that at least some point in time they were recoverable. I mean, presumably they may still be on backup tapes. I just don't know. And, of course, the White House isn't talking.
Well, who's in charge?
To act as if this is a new problem that they're first finding out about when they've known about it for years.
Well, who's in charge of finding out if they are recoverable? Karl Rove?
It should. I mean, they have a component called the Office of Administration that usually does all this technical stuff. And when the Clinton administration ran into problems with this missing email, that's the office it fell to bring in the outside contractors and spend the money and find the email. So, you know, it's not as if there's nobody within the White House that would be tasked with this.
Well,
they have an entity that's their job in part.
Well, whose job is it to make them do their job?
Well, it should be the president's. This is where there's sort of a problem with the Presidential Records Act, the law that requires them to preserve. While a president is in office, he's not subject to any oversight by the archivists, by the courts, or even by Congress. Because when they passed the law, Congress presumed a president would do the right thing and preserve the records of his administration. And we now know that assumption can't be counted on. So we've called on Congress to think about changing the law. But in the meantime, it's a big problem.
And we have some very specific PRA violations.
Yes.
Can you tell us what those are?
Well, it's the failure to preserve records. I think their conduct in using the RNC accounts is a violation of the PRA because they're using outside email accounts for official business, and that can't be questioned. When you're weighing in on what the Department of Justice should do as far as firing U.S. attorneys, that's not political work. That's official governmental work, and that should have been preserved. So that's a problem right there, and then their failure to recover these 5 million email plus is a violation. Their failure to have an effective email archiving, you know, system in place that will store the email so that it can, you know, eventually go on to be part of the public record, that's a violation. And these are knowing violations at this point.
And then there's also the question of whether or not using the outside email accounts.
Right.
Now, let's say that by the grace of God, 4 million of these emails are recovered.
Mm-hmm.
How long, Anne, does it take? Where does that put us in terms? I mean, does that put us within before this administration ends to go through at 4 million emails, and who would be going through them to figure out how important they are, whether they're important
or
relevant.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, it would be the job of the White House to figure out what's important. But I think at this point...
So wait a minute, let me get this straight. The White House has is responsible with charging the entity to go look for the 5 million plus emails. And if the 5 million plus emails are recovered, then the White House is in charge of gleaning from those 5 million that they couldn't find and they didn't put protections in to keep from happening. They're in charge of gleaning out of those what emails are important and what are not.
Yep. It's all, I mean, a sitting president has basically total control over his records, even though they don't belong to him. When he leaves office, they come under the exclusive control of the archivist, and they're the people's records. I mean, that was the whole point of the Presidential Records Act. It was passed to make it clear that the records of an administration, of a president, don't belong personally to the president. They belong to the American public.
Well, right now they appear like they belong to George W. Bush.
That's right. We have a problem. And as I said, I mean, Congress assumed presidents would do the right thing.
We now
have evidence suggests that that assumption is not well placed.
Yeah, how'd that work out for us?
Yeah.
this administration has said that... We didn't use the White House accounts because we created our own RNC accounts because we didn't want to violate the law. We didn't want to violate the Hatch Act.
Well, you know, again, I'm willing to accept that there might be certain email they sent that it's a question. You know, is this really political? Is this really official? And if here and there we were talking about inadvertently they'd used an outside email account, it was like, oops, that was really official. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about someone like Karl Rove, who 95% of the time uses his outside email account. We're talking about people who used outside email accounts to talk to Jack Abramoff and his associates about, you know, who people he wanted placed in the administration. We're talking about using outside email accounts, you know, to talk about firing U.S. attorneys at the Department of Justice. So they have really crossed the line, and they've done it again and again and again.
And didn't Abramoff send a oops email?
Tell us about that. Well, one of his associates said, you know, told him, you know, basically he'd gotten chewed out because they sent an email to Susan Ralston, who was at the time was Karl Rove's top assistant, you know, using her EOP email address, which meant that the email was going to get saved. And passed it on, you know, shouldn't have been using that account. And Jack Abramoff's response was, you know, damn it, I didn't mean to send it to her EOP email account.
I mean, isn't that the smoking gun
that, you know, not only did people within the White House know that they weren't supposed to use the accounts, but people outside the White House who wanted to carry on nefarious conversations,
they knew.
Don't use email accounts at the White House because then a record will be created.
So the White House and their friends knew, and America didn't.
That's what it seems.
Let me get to a caller or two. Gene, you have a question?
No, I don't have a question. It's just a comment. It just seems as though Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, and Gonzalez, whatever the area is, I think they're going to just ride out to the end of the term of the presidency. I don't think President Bush is going to let them go.
And is that one of the things that we're trying to get done here, Ann, is to get Karl Rove fired, to get Alberto Gonzalez removed from office, or is there a bigger issue involved?
I mean,
here? That's
not Cruz's mission. You know, we're trying to hold people accountable. And I think what all of this, you know, email scandals, and as I said, they're the two, the RNC, the White House email scandals, you know, it's a lack of accountability. It's a violation of the law. It appears to be flagrant, and it's a lack of accountability. You know, we'll leave it to others to decide, you know, what that should mean, including the public. But we just think it's really critical that the American public know what's going on.
And isn't there a danger in reducing this issue down into the personality of an Alberto Gonzalez or the job of an Alberto Gonzalez and the personality and or job of a Karl Rove? This is bigger than that, isn't it?
I would agree with you. I think, you know, personally, I think you're absolutely right. We're talking about, ultimately, sort of the integrity of the office of the president, the integrity of the office of the attorney general, and it's not so much the individuals. But it is important to, I think, make the point that nobody, the president, the attorney general, nobody's above the law.
And this Presidential Records Act, this wasn't something that was created in Clinton's administration.
No, no. It came after Nixon, because when Nixon left office, he took all his papers with him, and there were lawsuits. And then Congress realized, you know what, there's no law that says these are the people's records, not yours. So they passed the law, and it's sort of gone through a couple iterations, and then it became the Presidential Records Act. And actually, President Reagan was the first one to be subject to it. So this is nothing new. And as I said, I mean, this administration knew about the importance of it, because when they came into office, they were very well aware that Clinton administration had been plagued by email problems. So one of the first things that the Bush administration did was create a whole new office, the Chief Information Office. And they said when they did it, you know, they were going to get their arms around all of these problems.
And they did. They got their arms around and they kept all the information from us.
I think what people had in mind.
And where can people find out more about this issue?
Well, we've put an awful lot on our website, which is www.citizensforethics.org. Anytime we get documents or ask for documents, we post everything. And we issued a report last week about this whole issue. And as we glean more information, we make it publicly available, because that's really what our mission is, to tell the public what's going on with public officials.
So what do you expect will be the next step?
I don't know. We've asked for more information from the Office of Administration. We're now told that there are documents that were prepared some years ago that include, you know, an assessment of what would be the damage to public perception if they found out about these email problems.
And so there's no document about how to fix the problem. It's just
for that too. We'll see what we get.
Ann Wiseman, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Wake Up Call.
Thank you for having me.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown and the Wake Up Call. In the next half an hour, I'm going to be talking to a father who lost his son, Jesus, when he stepped on a United States cluster bomb. He stepped on one of our bombs, and he died. This is a father that's been traveling around the country speaking out against the invasion and the occupation of Iraq. He's going to be joining us in just a few minutes. You don't want to miss that conversation. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with me.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
Hello, I'm Minister Glenn Rogers, host of Radio UFO, Uncommon Facts and Observations. On my show, I've had some wonderful guests, like Dennis Balthaser, the coordinator of the 60th anniversary of the Roswell incident, Felix Clairvoyant, a priest with the Raelian Movement, an organization that believes that mankind was made from a higher civilization of mankind, and William Bill Burns, editor of UFO Magazine. Tune in for more Radio UFO every Tuesday and Saturday, 9 to 11 p.m. on AM 920. WGNU.
Hi, I'm Randy Grimm. Join me Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. for Animal Tales on AM 920 WGNU. Animals have always mattered to me, so that's why we discuss the issues that matter most to you and your animal companions. Join us as our special guests and I examine puppy mills, parrots, turtles, ferrets, and answer your questions about pet care. For 2 hours of fur, friends, and fun every week, join me, Randy Grimm, for Animal Tales, Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on AM 920 WGNU. Woof!
Hi,
Hi, I'm Lorraine Davis, home mortgage consultant with Wells Fargo.
And I'm Jacques Land with the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis.
And we're the host of Let's Get Wealthy, investing in more ways than one.
We'll discuss home ownership as a means to build wealth, create positive personal finances, stabilize our neighborhoods, and acquire the American dream.
Tune into our show, Let's Get Wealthy, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. to get some food for thought during your lunch hour. Sponsored by the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis, Wells Fargo Housing Foundation, and produced by the Platinum Group.
Around the world, behind the story. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Para donde vas? Para donde vas? Para donde vas? Para donde vas? Donde vas? Para donde vas,
muchacha?
Para donde vas?
Oye, mujer?
Para donde vas?
Dime.
Para donde vas? Donde vas?
Si vas al baile, baila conmigo. Si vas al carnaval, quiero ir contigo. Si vas a donde quiera, no me quedo atrás, porque quiero amarte más y más.
¿Para dónde vas,
muchacha?
¿Para dónde vas,
oye, mujer?
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. For the rest of this morning, we're going to be talking to a father who lost his son in the war in Iraq, and a father that sees no contradiction between supporting the troops and being against the war. He's joining us from California, Fernando Suarez de Salor. Fernando, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Very good. Fernando, those of us that talk about the wrongness of this occupation in Iraq, those of us that challenge this administration in getting us into this war, there are people that would say that those of us that hold that position are not in support of the troops, that you cannot be against this war and be in support of the troops. What would you say to those people?
Well, it's very easy. It's possible to support the troops because, in my opinion, it's the first victims for the Bush administration when attacked Iraq. The boys and girls in uniform believe when begin the war in the chief, in the commander and chief, when say the Iraq is the enemy, the Iraq is very dangerous for America. And the boys and girls put the life on the front for defend America. But everybody know today which lie. It's never proved the relation September 11 and Iraq, never find any illegal weapon in Iraq, is because today more than 75% of people in the United States don't support the war and say bring the troops home now.
Talk to us about your son.
Well, Jesus is an ordinary boy with dreams like the old boys in the United States. He like joined to the police department, but the recruiter convinced my son is better join to the military system for 1 year for receive training, and in 1 year Jesus changed the rank and go to the federal agent for combat the narcotraffic. Jesus signed, Jesus joined to the military, and 3 months later Jesus understand the recruiter lie. No 1 year in the military, it's minimum 8 years.
Wait a minute, Fernando. You're telling us that Jesus was told by the recruiter that all he had to spend in the military was 1 year, and then he can go become a federal police officer?
Exactly.
And how old was Jesus?
17 and a half. I believe when the recruiter said, hey.
So How did the recruiter get to your son, Jesus? Did he go into his high school? How did he get to him?
Oh, no, the recruiter got Jesus when he was about 13 years old, when Jesus and my family live in Tijuana, Mexico, and we cross the border the weekend for the shopping, and we find the beautiful stand, the recruiter, in the shopping center. The recruiter got my son's telephone in Tijuana, and working with my son for 3 years.
Well, hold up, just for a second. Are you telling us that there were military, United States military recruiters located in Tijuana's shopping malls?
No, in San Diego shopping.
San Diego shopping malls. Okay.
I've got my son's telephone in Tijuana and called my son for 3 years.
He was calling your son in Tijuana?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes. He's very popular and very ordinary. The recruiters in San Diego, in the border area, contact the Mexican boys when have a green card and living in the Mexico area, but have a green card, and the recruiter working with the boys for joining to the military.
So did Jesus have a green card?
Yes.
He had one, and this recruiter was calling into Tijuana, Mexico, to get at your son and other people's sons.
Yes.
And he was calling him since he was 13, 14 years old?
Yes, Jesus was about 13 years old, almost 14, and convinced my son is better coming to the United States, finish the high school here, or join to the Marine Corps, in 1 year go to the federal agent.
So is that what happened, Fernando?
Well, Jesus joined to the military, I believe, when the recruiter died, because he's the military, I believe in the honor. And it's impossible for me, the people lie about the 1 year only, and it's 8 years, etc. Well, Jesus going to the Iraq in February 2003. In March 27, the war began. March 27, my son died in Iraq. And the government lied me about what happened to my son. The government told me your son died in combat when received the shot on the head with the enemy fire.
But the government said that the enemy killed Jesus, that they shot him in the head.
Yes. But this one is not true. 3 days late, when I received the information about my son died, the people from the American television called me and told me, if somebody lied you, your son not die in combat, your son not die when received the shot on the head, your son died when stepped the American cluster bomb.
Well, how did they find out, Fernando? Did you find that out? How did they come to find out that something that the military knew and didn't tell you?
Well, the military told me the version about the combat and shot on the head, but the man, the name Bob Woodruff for the ABC News television, is with my son when my son died.
Oh.
And he called me and told me, the military lied you, your son died when I stepped the illegal American cluster bomb.
How did you feel? What went through your head when Bob Woodward told you something that the military had lied to you about, and the fact that your son not only was not killed by the enemy, but he was killed when he stepped on an American-made cluster bomb while in Iraq? What went through your head? What did you think?
In the first time, I put super very angry, very upset. Believe me, I have opportunity to have the kill the Bush, and I kill Bush. But more later, my mind changed. But the first time, I'm very angry. I have a lot of courage against the government and against the people, because I lost my son, the people like me, and it's very, very bad situation in this moment.
So you are out there right now, What are you doing? You had to have gone through some amazing and awful psychological changes, and are you how are you dealing with that?
Well, I visited Iraq in December 2003 with Bob Woodruff, and I see the other face, the war. I see the same place my son died, but I see the Iraqi ordinary people, the children hospital. I see the children dying in hospital because they don't have a medicine. And my name very changed because I understand my pain is nothing about the other pain. When the Iraqi families lost the full family in one moment.
Mm.
It's very bad when I have opportunity to meet with the one woman, Iraqi woman. She's lost the 5 boys and the husband in the 1 second.
An Iraqi woman lost 5 sons and her husband all at once?
Yes, when the American airplanes dropped the bombs, and one bomb killed the whole family. And at this moment, I understand we need working more for peace, no working for attack the government. We need working for peace. It's when I understand we need continuing in the job for go to the hospital, go here in the United States to the school and try the young people understand the war is not the way for peace. The war is only more destruction.
And how about other families out there, other Hispanic families? Are you working with them and trying to help them because of the psychological damage and challenges that they face?
Yes, I am a member co-founder of the Military Family Speak Out and my organization, Guerrero Azteca Peace Project. And I visit different cities around the country, and I try the families join together, make small groups, and I find the doctor for offer the psychology therapy because the government never offer and never bring any help with the families lost the son or daughters.
Well, it's interesting to me, Fernando, that we have American military recruiters on this side of the border calling in to speak to young Mexican boys to try to get them and recruit them into the military. And yet when those boys give the ultimate sacrifice and die on behalf of this country, is that same military trying to reach into Mexico to help those families whose sons and daughters have given the ultimate sacrifice?
Oh, yes, yes. And the other bad point is, American government, for example, not pay the full amount for the funeral.
The government doesn't pay the full amount for a funeral if the young person that died is from Mexico?
No. For example, my son died, and I used the civil cemetery in San Diego. The government paid only $4,350.
Why?
When the funeral minimum is more than $7,000.
Why did they pay the lesser amount, Fernando?
Well, in my case, I working in the minimum salary. I need to call the people and help me with donation for pay my son's funeral. In my opinion, it's immoral and dishonor for the sacrifice the boy when died in Iraq.
I'm talking to Fernando Suarez del Solo. He's joining us from California. He lost his son, Jesus, when Jesus stepped on a U.S. cluster bomb while fighting in Iraq. We'll be back with more of this conversation. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with me. know the place to shop for all your appliance needs? Sears. 3425 Union. Black-owned and black-operated. Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@WGNU.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
I'm Karen Stewart. Join me on Sunday morning at 8 a.m. for Strategies for Building Wealth. This program will explore topics designed to help you better manage your finances, improve your net worth, and understand the basics of investing. So join me as we talk about strategies for building wealth, Sunday morning at 8 a.m. right here on WGNU.
Time to make your money work for you.
Don't miss today's Sloan Ranger Show on WGNU. Missouri Congressman Todd Akin joins Lloyd just after 5:30. Then in the 6 o'clock hour, Krista Kafer of the Independent Women's Forum discusses the boy crisis in American education. That's all on the Sloan Ranger with Lloyd Sloan. 5 till 7 weeknights on AM 920 WGNU.
Award-winning wake-up call, analyzing the story shaping your world.
You don't know how you met me, you don't know why you can't turn around and say goodbye. All you know is when I'm with you, I make you free and swim through your veins like a fish in the sea. I'm singing, follow me, everything is alright. I'll be the one to tuck you in at night. And if you want to leave, I can guarantee you won't find nobody else like me. I'm not worried.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown, and I'm talking to Fernando Suarez del Solar. He's a father who lost his son, Jesus, while his son was fighting in Iraq. His son stepped on a United States cluster bomb and was killed, but Fernando was lied to by our government about how his son died. And Fernando, welcome back. Hello, Fernando.
Yes, Lisa, I am here.
Okay. Talk to us about your counter-recruitment organization.
Well, my organization working in the high school, we visit different high schools around the country and show the young boys the other face in the military. Normally, the recruiters never say the whole truth about what happened in the military. They know, explain very good what is the sacrifice, what is the different activities in the military. And I try to show the young boys and girls my son's story. and explain, for example, the beautiful promise for money for university, for college, is not real, is not true. When the young boys need to pay $100 every month for a scholarship, and I explain the young people to the military, no, bring the free uniform. The young boys need to pay for uniform, pay for life insurance, pay for supply for cleaning the military base. And it's very important because, in my opinion, the school is for education, for books, not for uniforms, not for military or police or the other agents when they use the weapon. Yesterday, everybody know what happened in the university with the violence. And I believe the school is necessary, no more influence for use the weapon.
And how do you have any idea, Fernando, of the numbers of young men and young women who are recruited by American recruiters here in the United States calling into Tijuana? I mean, they started talking to your son when he was 14 years old in Tijuana. Do you have any idea of the numbers?
No, I don't have idea exactly how many Mexican or is joined to the military when leaving Tijuana. I know it's the recruiters cross the border without a uniform and go to the school, go to the restaurants, discotheques, and make the friendly relation with the young people, make an investigation about they have a green card or American citizen.
Wait a minute, Fernando. You're saying that military recruiters take off their uniforms, they cross the border of Mexico into Mexico, they go into Mexican high schools, they go to the discotheques, they go to the malls, looking for young kids that have their green cards.
Exactly. It's one very publicity, one case in October 2003 with the one recruited military go to the one high school in Tijuana and pass the flyer with propaganda from join to the military. The principal for the high school in Tijuana find the young boy when they pass the propaganda, call the police, call the government, and it's in the newspaper, etc. This happened in October 2003. But it's very ordinary, very popular, the recruiters cross the border and gather the young people and repeat in the high school, shopping, restaurant, etc.
So they don't have any problem getting into Mexico to do this?
No, because it's without uniform. Remember, the American people don't need a passport for inside in Mexico. And it's very easy. It's no problem for the Mexican recruiter.
How do Mexican principals and parents and students feel about these types of recruitment efforts?
Well, what happened is it's very upset. The people don't like this situation. When I visit the different high school in Mexico, in the border area, I receive a lot of information about, oh, yeah, the recruiting is coming, etc., but it's not very acceptation when the young people going to the military in the United States, more today when the war have more than 4 years.
So it's more difficult today because of the Iraq war for kids to join up, or is it easier, or are more kids joining up because there are more recruiters down there?
Yes. And now the recruiters is working very hard, put a lot of efforts in the United States, but in immigrant areas. Very poor areas. You're going to see the recruiters every single day in the poor communities, but in the rich communities, you never see the recruiters. In 2005, the recruiter's office is closed for 1 day, and everybody goes to the Pentagon to receive the special training for working with the Mexican or immigrant young people.
Excuse me?
In 2005, the all military recruiters in the United States is closed for one day, and all recruiters receive a special seminar for understand the immigrant culture for working with the immigrant for joining the military.
So in one day, all the recruitment offices in the United States shut down in order for the recruiters to receive special training on how to get at immigrant boys and girls.
Exactly. Because maybe you know in 2004, 5, and 6, the recruiters no got the numbers, minimum numbers for the new recruiters.
So it worked.
Exactly. And today you're going to see the more advertising in the television, in the newspaper, in Spanish, for joining to the military.
I live in a part of the city that is mostly people of African descent, Fernando, and I am seeing billboards in my community in Spanish.
Yeah.
Trying to recruit, trying to recruit.
Exactly. The military system is very a bad situation for the new recruiters. It's because today the government extended time to boys in Iraq for 15 months, not for 12 months.
That's right. That's right. Fernando, I want to thank you so much for joining me this morning on the wake-up call. You've given us some very, very, very good information. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, the wake-up call. Tomorrow, of course, Justice for Reggie Thursday, Eye on the Lou. And we're also going to have a wonderful discussion about emancipation for Washington, D.C. All of that tomorrow on the wake-up call. You don't want to miss any of it, not a minute of it, not a second of it. My name is Liz Brown. Thank you all for listening, and until tomorrow, stay strong.
And was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution to the air. Tell me, brothers, how can you sustain?
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemy demands tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian,